download. Chicago Bear Hall of Famer Richard Dent. From the Writers Theater in Glencoe, Michael Halberstam and Kate Le Puma. And Chicago musician Jennifer Hall. And now, here's your host, a man who styled his whole game after Richard Dent, Justin Kaufman.
Yeah, anyone who's ever seen me play, I'm a stand-up rusher. You know, I'm just one of those kind of, I got so much swagger. You know, I just look like I'm going to win. I mean, we're talking when I was 12 behind the church in Wonder Lake, but still, so Richard Dent. Oh, I love it. Everyone else wanted to be Walter Payton, you know, some Jim McMahon's me. I'm like, no, I'm going to wear a good old 95. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 11 o'clock here on WGN. Got a total Chicago show for you tonight. We got news, we got real estate, we got sports, theater, live music, pizza, you name it. We got it all. First up, you know, if you own a home in the area, you probably have been inundated with refinancing offers. Seriously, I mean, it's like I'm getting UPS offers to my house. Like the UPS guy's asking me to sign and it's a letter saying you should refi. What's happening? Why is this happening? We're going to talk with the owner of Townstone Financial about what's behind the refi boom. And what he thinks the Fed might do with mortgage rates in the near future. And the Chicago Tribune has been busy this month. New boss, new editor, and now a new digital subscription plan. Gone are the little blue pluses. Good. Except now what am I going to do? Right now, something's not right. I can already tell. It's not going to be that easy. But we're going to talk. They're talking about moving to, they did today. They moved to metered. Is this the wave of the future? In news subscription media, we'll find out. Scott Smith will be here. And in sports, the Bulls watch the trade deadline come and go with little movement. So what does this mean for the future of the franchise? Are they seeing red? Or are we, the fans, seeing red? Disappointing. I'll be honest, Pete. I was hoping to see some change. But, I mean, maybe they get everybody healthy. Maybe they can make a run. You never know. Well, Sam Panjanovic will be here. We'll talk with Sam about what he thinks. My guest tonight at the big table, the sack man cometh. That's right. You've been hearing about the big roast of Richard Dent all week here on WGN. Well, we'll sit down with Dent to talk about his football career, his relationship with the Bears organization, and what it means to be a celebrity sports hero in this city, the city of Chicago. That's not all. The Writers Theater in Glencoe has a beautiful, brand new building designed by Jeannie Gang. We're going to talk with Michael Halberstam and Kate Le Puma about what a permanent theater space will do for the community, for the company, and for the play. And we wrap up tonight with live music from indie soul singer Chicago and Jennifer Hall. Hall's playing the Bee Kitchen on Saturday, and before she rocks out on West Belmont, she's going to rock out here on Michigan Avenue. Woo! News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Zim, Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, let's get to business. Should we start with the carryout? Of course, this is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home? You don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Trump is taking on the Pope. Well, I call him New Pope. New Pope questioned Trump's Christianity over the Build the Wall chicanery. Trump called New Pope a disgrace. Maybe if Trump can't pull off this presidency, I wonder if he could just run for Pope. Pope Trump, I talk to God. God says you're idiots, you huge idiots. I really got to work on my Trump. That's all I got. So obvious. This is interesting. No Chicago police officers have died in the line of duty since 2011. What? What's more amazing is that's the longest stretch in Chicago since the 19th century. You know, when cops died from dysentery. Terrible way to die. A new Chicago testosterone study proves that when we have more testosterone, we have more energy.
Yes! Yes, that's what I'm talking about! Yes!
Side effects may include an affinity for Stetson cologne.
Oh, I love to smell like leather!
Could it be? Could the city actually lose a lawsuit over building the Lucas Museum on the lakefront? Good. We could keep that land as God and Daniel Burnham intended it to be, a Soldier Field parking lot. The Chicago Tribune has a new editor. Bruce Dold comes over from the editorial board. Former editor Jerry Kern retired, effective immediately. Immediately? Now how are employees supposed to make commemorative plates or buy them golf clubs or whatever else you do at retirement parties? Do you ever think about that? Maybe employees like going to the plate store and making commemorative plates on a Saturday afternoon for their old boss.
You never know. Thousands of black-tipped sharks are hovering around the Florida coast because, you know, that's normal. Scientists are blaming climate change. So there you go. You thought that buying that gas-guzzling Hummer wouldn't have any effect on the planet. Now, you can't swim in Florida during winter without sharks eating you. You know, I was apathetic with the ice caps, but now sharks in Florida in the winter is personal. Peace Pizza in Wicker Park is being sued by the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Weezer for doing live karaoke. Wait, are they suing over the rights, or are they suing because everyone goes to the bar and stops paying attention when someone picks Under the Bridge? I don't want to ever go. Yeah, I'm going to go get a beer. You want to get out of this place? So lame. In weather, almost 60 tomorrow, but really windy. You know what? No deal. In sports, and you thought the Bulls were going to stand pat. Nope. The Bulls recognized the need to shake up the lineup, so they traded Kurt Heinrich to the Hawks for a guy named Holiday and a second-round pick. Second-round pick? Really? They got more than one round in basketball? Yeah, you learn something new every day. Well, I guess when it comes playoff time, instead of saying, come on, Heinrich, we'll just say, come on, second-round pick. They should make the second-round pick wear the goggles. Former Chicago Bear Jared Allen retired today. He posted a video on Twitter saying goodbye, and then he just rode off on a horse. Really, he just rode off on a horse. Yeah, and I don't know why he didn't fit in here in Chicago. I don't get it. The Blackhawks visited the White House today. President Obama said he was the Hawks' lucky charm, and the Hawks gave him a lifetime parking pass to the United Center. Yeah, that's actually awesome. I hope it's not one of those satellite parking lots, though. No shuttle. No shuttle for President Obama. Don't make him go drink at a bar to get on a half bus. Josh Whitman is the new Illini athletic director. He talked to the press today saying that the Illini sports has to regain its identity. Wait, what identity is that exactly? Read option over and over and over to Rashard Mendenhall? A couple of 500 seasons with Jeff George? Tony Eason? Anybody? Wait, is he talking Butkus? We going all the way back to Butkus? And Tom Ricketts said today that his vision for the plaza around Wrigley Field is like a European town. I guess that makes sense. Have you been to a town in Wales after the bar shut down? It's like World War Z. I mean, they just walk down the middle of the street, fighting, screaming, peeing on cars. So yeah, Clark Street. And finally, it's National Drink Wine Day. So if you're out and about, make sure you order a glass of Chardonnay. But if you're at home, come on, who are we kidding? You're already halfway through the bottle. Finish it off, lightweight. Finish it off! Finish it off! Oh, God. Testosterone. That's the carryout for February 18, 2016. Hey, you should order the Perch Salad. Nobody ever orders the Perch Salad. I don't know why.
Coming up, the Colonel, Richard Dent. We're going to sit down at the big table, spread out, and talk about his career in Chicago, what he thought about town when he was drafted. Lots to talk about. Also, we're going to talk about mortgage rates and the refi boom and the disappointing trade day for the Chicago Bulls. It's the Download here on WGN. Stay with us. It's the Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up 8 o'clock, Richard Dent. I'm going to sit down. He's my guest at the big table tonight. We're going to talk about his career in Chicago. But before we do that, we'll talk a little Bulls. And if you're like me, you're getting a lot of mail and a lot of phone calls, emails from banks, from mortgage lenders, from finance companies telling you, hey, it's time to refinance. I got a UPS from Chase Bank. The guy showed up. He's like, he didn't sign for this. I'm like, what did I? Oh, okay. And I opened it up and it was just like a letter saying you should refinance. Like it was
just FedEx?
It was a UPS. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So that just tells you. So my big question is why and why now? Well, that's the question I'm trying to get at, because it's obvious every financial agency got the same memo from somewhere. Barry Sterner is the owner of Townstone Financial, and he joins me in studio. Barry, thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure being here. I'm glad to come.
Let's talk about this, because I've gotten phone calls, I've gotten mailers, emails, everything saying, you know what, now's the time to refinance. Why is now the time?
Well, two and a half weeks, anybody who's looked at their 401k plan, and I try not to look, or anything financial that you own at this particular time, gone down, 12, 15%?
I made the mistake of looking at mine.
I try, you know, on Saturday when Barron's comes, I look, but during the week I try not to look anymore because now I know I'm going to be working until I'm 80 years old. Plus, our kids are the same age, and when they go to college, it's going to be $300,000 instead of whatever it is now. But what's really happened is that the Fed raised interest rates in December. Everybody thought rates were going to go up, and you know, when everybody thinks something, you hear the smart people, the experts say that. It usually doesn't happen that way. And then all of a sudden, something odd happened in China, and the Chinese market started tanking, brought the U.S. stock market down. And when people sell stocks, the one thing everybody has to remember, when people are doing one thing, selling stocks, they are taking that money. Even if they have losses in it, there's still cash coming out, and they're looking for somewhere safe. And the safest spot happens to be the U.S. Treasury market in the world. So they buy 10-year notes, they buy 5-year notes, they buy U.S. Treasury bonds, and that is directly affecting the United States mortgage market. So irrelevant of what Yellen and crew did, the Federal Reserve raised rates. Rates have actually decreased. We are as low as we were in 2012. I believe it was February 2012 was the low. We were doing refinances around 3.25. We're a little higher right now. 30-year fix was at 3.25. The lowest that I have done over the last week has been 3.375 on a 30-year fix. 15-year fixed right at 3.2875. So the real reason everyone's calling you, and let's be honest here, is data migration. I mean, even Townstone, you know, we're not the biggest company in America, but we have all this data right now. It's very easy for us to get at the data.
So you have homeowner data.
I did not send. I did not send any FedExes. I was telling Justin before what we did was I had a tech. My tech guru likes these voice drops, and some people like them, some people they don't. And the last 24 months of people we did, or 18 months, whatever the rule happens to be, I did a voice drop, and I said, hey, it's Barry Sterner. Rates are down, which I guess is better than you coming home and getting that mail. You come home, you listen on your cell phone. Rates are down. I can't call everybody that quickly. If you'd like to, you know, get some refinancing options and your rate, what I said, is above 4% on a 30-year fix or below, above 3.5% on a 15, give me a shout.
Me ask you, Barry, because I'm a layman. I own a home, but I, you know, at the same time, I'm not paying that close attention to this stuff. Like, does it hurt the economy when there's a boom like this, when rates are down and everybody is refinancing their mortgages at the same time?
I think it absolutely helps the economy, because if you think about this, if, say, your rate is 4%, and forget about the rate for a second, say your payment is $2,000 a month, and I can lower your payment to $1,900, to $1,800, that's $200 a month. Who's losing that money? The people who owned your mortgage. And I hate to say who owns your mortgage, but usually anything under $417,000 these days. Do you know who owns the mortgage?
Who?
You do. The United States government owns it, because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac buy just about all the mortgages under $417,000.
Why did they do that? They do that to protect it?
No, they took it over in conservatorship when they were basically going bankrupt in 2008. So the losers really is the United States government, because they're losing the interest. But the economy is gaining, because the individual has more money, hopefully, you want to say, to spend. Hopefully you're going buying new clothes, buying a new car, whatever. You save $100 a month, extra money to go out to eat, things of that nature.
So it helps the consumer.
I think it helps the consumer, helps the economy, really gets things moving.
So let's talk about, you know, what's next? I mean, how long will something like this boom? Because to be honest, I mean, this is traditionally the purchase time for houses, for homes. You know, when we hit the springtime, that's when the market starts buzzing. Is what's going to happen with the mortgages and refinances? Is it going to be the same thing? Is this going, or are we going to see, as the stock market goes up, that the rates kind of level up?
If the stock market starts going up, you're going to get money pulled out. The opposite happens. Money gets pulled out of the bond market, goes into the stock market, and then rates start to go up. I believe rates will start inching up. It's just a matter of when. The purchase market, I have to say, and I've been telling people this probably for the last 5 months, October, November, and December, we had more purchases this in 2015 than we've had since 2008.
Really?
The purchase market, I'd say it's on fire, but that's overdoing it. It's very hot. Any realtor that you'd speak to right now, anybody who's actually looking for a house today, find something ironic happening. When they go out looking for the house, there's not a lot of houses for sale.
Yeah, right.
It's a very, very odd market. There's not enough product out there for the demand, and that's really what's creating the increase in property values, which is a good thing to happen when you have demand and less supply, rather than the way that it happened previously, which right. anybody who had an arm or, you know, or a finger who could sign a mortgage got a mortgage, whether they had money or not. So it's all good for the economy. I think the housing market is very strong.
Let me ask you you know, one of the things we've seen, you know, obviously with the with Hollywood getting involved with The Big Short and other places, is this sort of, you know, cautionary tale where, you know, it's a lot about what happened in 2008, 2009, and it may happen again. As someone who's in the financial industry, someone who's a mortgage broker, you own your own Townstone, do you see the same sort of, I guess, benchmarks or little hints that things could be moving back in that direction?
You know, We did a whole podcast. I was telling you about this the other day. I read The Big Short. I did not see the movie yet, but it's opposite right now, which is exactly what I'm saying. The demand isn't coming from some made up product, a no income, a stated income,
right.
Whatever you want to call it. The demand is really coming from individuals looking for houses who have been qualified beyond belief. You just bought a house, you told me. Mm-hmm. I'm sure anybody who's gone into buying houses know. I mean, we take everything but your firstborn right now. I mean, the process is the process.
Yeah.
They're checking every little thing. But as a person who studies history and loves history, and financially in the United States, history repeats itself, I see the market opening up, but nowhere near the level because of something called Dodd-Frank, which we're all familiar with and what's happening right. Nowhere near where it was before. It should open up a little bit because at this time, it's still so narrow. There's so many people who can't get loans who should be able to get loans. I don't see a repeat, but you can never say never. It is what it is. It's the financial market.
So you guys are teaching realtors and first-time home buyers a little bit about the market and what they're getting involved in with an event on next Thursday, the 25th at 11 o'clock at the Roosevelt Icon.
Roosevelt Icon at 11 o'clock. Never been in a movie theater at 11 o'clock during the week, but we got the whole theater. So you can RSVP by going to townstone.com. It really started off with a bunch of realtors, and we were going to talk to them about millennials because the millennials right now, for some unknown reason, they've seen their parents lose money on their houses, and they're very hesitant to buy. I mean, I get questions all the time. I don't want to buy. They live in Chicago. Taxes are going up.
Right.
Property taxes are going up. What am I going to do? And I tell them, I hate to tell you, but if you've looked at your rent, it's increased every year.
Yeah.
And when taxes going up, your landlord's raising the rent. So you're not going to save there. You might as well buy something when it's costing you $3,000 for a two-bedroom, one-bath that you're sharing with your buddy, and that kind of gets old. So if you come to the Icon Theater on Roosevelt, what is it? It's right next to the Target over there, if anybody knows what it is. I don't know the address off the top of my head, or townstone.com. We're going to talk about all these different things. Realtors come over there, too, because we're going to talk about same things that you talk about all the time. You know, Twitter, Facebook, Google, all the different ways that these people are getting information. And it's much different from the way you and I get information. Plus, they want their mortgage like they had on the Super Bowl, the Rocket Mortgage, which really turned out to be what you're talking about right now. People are worried that the Rocket Mortgage is no paperwork, no doc, no this and that. And I don't think we're going there. We're really going more to less paperwork.
Yeah, and you know what? We'll have to have you back because I want to talk about that. I think that that commercial was an eye opener for me. But we'll schedule you back. We'll talk about the idea of paperless mortgages. Barry Sterner is the owner of Townstone Financial here in Chicago. You can go to his event on the 25th at 11 o'clock at the Roosevelt Icon, teaching real estate and lending to realtors about and first time buyers.
Absolutely,
mostly millennials. Barry, good to see you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
We like the core of this team, and that was a big goal of ours, to bring back some of the key pieces moving forward, because we didn't have flexibility to be a big player in free agency.
You're dead wrong. You never have the skills like mine. I write the ill-type rhymes. Now I'm
rhyme. Gar Forman right there, Bulls general manager, talking about the lack of movement on this trade deadline. The Chicago Bulls were rumored to be big players at the trade deadline today, but all they moved was Kurt Heinrich to the Atlanta Hawks for Justin Holiday and a second-round pick. I didn't know, Sam Panjanovic, there were second-round picks in the NBA anymore.
Who cares? I don't care at this point. That's a trade you made. You had all these chips. You had all these opportunities. The Kings wanted Pau Gasol. They wanted to take Pau Gasol from you because you're going to not probably get anything for him at the end of the year. He's a free agent. He's saying all the right things. I'd love to be back, yada, yada, yada. But at this point, and I tweeted this out earlier, you didn't get better, and the future isn't brighter. So you're still in that middle ground where you're not good enough to win a title.
Right.
But you're not bad enough where you're going to get a really good draft pick.
It's like a number six seed we got here.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, they, you know, 4, 5, 6.
So let's talk about this because, you know, the Bulls had – they had incentive to be players at the trade deadline. They have a luxury tax issue. They have a lot of aging players. They have a lot of guys who have playoff experience that could help, could be rented players for other teams. It wasn't like the Bulls were in a position where they have been in the last couple of years where they had no chips to play.
Yeah, shocker. I mean, this is, you know, the fifth year in a row where they had a chance, maybe even 6 years in a row where you had a chance to add something to your team to possibly vault over, you know, what it was Miami for years with LeBron and Wade and Bosch. Now it's Cleveland. LeBron's back there. This team right now is not going to beat Cleveland in a seven-game series. So what is your goal here? Are you trying to beat Cleveland and finally go to the finals, or are you going to rebuild? And I don't think that they know. Unfortunately, I don't think that even matters because you look at Jerry Reinsdorf and, you know, for one thing, he's very loyal, but on both sides of the coin, you know, with the White Sox, they've been to the playoffs one time since 05 and nothing's really changed.
Wow. Panionovich calling out the Reinsdorf brought 6 championships to the Bulls and a baseball championship.
Well, he lucked into Michael Jordan. The thing is, though, I mean, the White Sox have missed the playoffs 3 years in a row.
Yes.
They missed... they've had a losing record for the last 5, and Robin Ventura is still
fine. I think what you're saying
fun.
Is, yeah, that Reinsdorf is a loyal owner.
Which is good. It's good to have loyalty in the front office.
But we're seeing mediocrity from some of his products.
The team's gotten worse, Justin. We talked about this when they fired Tom Thibodeau, and they talked about changing culture and making sure that you can communicate better. That doesn't matter.
Okay, let's talk about this because one of the things Gar Forman said today is that Fred Hoiberg has a bright future with this club, and they're very excited about what Coach Fred Hoiberg brings to the team. Now that's almost in contrast to what we see in the media or fans, where we're like, it doesn't seem like Hoiberg and the team are gelling.
Yeah, I mean, this started back around the 25 game mark when Jimmy Butler famously called out his rookie head coach and said that he's not really doing the right job and he needs to coach them harder. Okay, that's 25 games into your first season. You're already calling out your head coach. And, you know, Hoiberg was supposed to come in and create a lot more free, creativity and a lot more freedom and a lot more open jump shots. And Jimmy Butler is this old 1990s guard where he wants to walk it up the floor and run isolations and stuff. So it's a bad mix between star player and new head coach, but they're both intertwined because they signed a 5-year contract at the same time.
It feels like it would be that... You know, Fred Hoiberg would be a great Derrick Rose coach 4 years ago.
Yes.
You know, like when
that's not the case.
Yeah, when Rose was running just reckless abandon down the court, that's where Hoiberg would be a better fit for him.
How often do you watch the Bulls? Be honest.
Because of this show, there was a time two, 3 years ago where I would race home to watch. I would tape every game and watch every game. I think this was the year that Rose blew out his knee in the playoff game. So that year, I was like, oh, my God, I can't get enough.
Do you do that now?
I do not do that now. As a matter of fact, I had a chance to watch the Bulls the other night. I watched about maybe a half of the first quarter.
You just turned it off.
I totally forgot about it. I moved to something else.
Pete, do you watch? You ever watch? You can just nod if you want. You do. Okay, you still watch. All right, so Pete is kind of going down the barrel. You know, he's finding the bottom of the barrel.
Okay, so let's talk about this because let's be Bulls apologetics for a second. Apologists. Okay, injuries. Joakim Noah never really got out of the gate. He had injuries from the get-go. Derrick Rose broke his face in the first game of a training camp or the first practice. You see, now Jimmy Butler's been out for a couple weeks. Mirotić has lost a stomach somewhere along the line. They have a tremendous amount of injury problems. Mike Dunleavy hasn't been on the court. So is it possible that this season so far has been more affected by the injury bug than anything that Fred Hoiberg and management has done to hurt.
That's an angle to look at. The problem is that these players have been injured before, and they will be injured again because most of them, when you talk about Noah and Gasol last year, had a hamstring. Dunleavy's in his mid-30s. You know, these guys don't get younger, and the bodies don't heal as well when you turn 30. Yeah. And that's just the way it goes.
And that was great. That was what Thibs was great at, because it was like, oh, man, you could brought John Lucas III out there and win in 10 games in a row.
I'll just say this. When teams used to come in, and I've been around that group for about 4 years now, when opposing teams would come in, they would dread playing the Bulls. You didn't want to play the Bulls because, A, they were going to hit you, and B, they were going to go to war with you. You know, they were going to be physical. They were going to follow you hard. They were going to find a way to take away what you do well defensively. Now, it's gone. They don't defend. They're not tough. They don't really rebound that well. And it's just ratings are down 30%. Did you know that? Sports Business Daily says local ratings for the Bulls are down 30%. And I know a lot of people that sell tickets online, you know, StubHub or, you know, whatever avenue you want. They're getting nothing because nobody wants to go. People aren't watching.
That's a shame.
And the team just, I mean, they're 27 and 25. We talked about this last week. They haven't been that bad since Vinny Del Negro was here.
And I told you last week, don't
bring
that name up.
Don't say that. Well, I just brought it back.
Don't bring that name up. All right, so let's talk about what, as we move forward and we look at the outlook for the second half of the season. I mean, obviously they start out the gate.
Yeah,
they start out the gate with Cleveland tonight. They got Toronto coming up here. You know, those are the two teams to beat. There's a chance that the Bulls will get Jimmy Butler back, that they could go on a run and they could make some waves in the East. How likely is it that we will see a team that comes together in the second half of the season, when these injuries, when Dunleavy's on the court, when Mirotić is back, if he comes back, where these guys are healthy and are playing like they're supposed to play?
20%. Okay. 20% chance. And even if they are healthy, they probably still don't beat either of those two teams. So, you know, unfortunately, you're at this point now where you're looking for some sort of change. And they've had a chance to possibly shape the roster differently. Now, some people I've talked to close to the team and close to the media conglomerate talk about it needs failure before change comes. So you need to almost have them miss the playoffs.
Is there a chance they don't make the playoffs? I mean, they've sunk. They were at one point the one or the two, and now they're down at the six and the seven.
They'll get in and watch them get in as the six or seven and knock off, you know, Boston or whatever, in the first round. And then all is well until, you know, you play LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love. It's just fascinating to me because, you know, one of the guys down the dial uses the term basketball hell, and that's exactly what it is. I mean, they're not good enough to win it all, but they're not bad enough to get better. So here we are, another trade deadline gone by, no moves made, all quiet on the Western Front, and Gar Foreman and John Paxson still employed, still happy, still excited. They still think it's a championship roster, baby.
So what you're telling us is now it's Justin Holiday's team.
I had to look him up. No, here's the telling point. Media day, late August, or maybe early September, Gar Foreman, the general manager, says, "This is a championship team. We love this roster, yada, yada, yada." He made a trade today to get closer to the luxury tax line.
There you
Trying
go.
Trying to trim the luxury tax. This is months after saying that it's a title team. So there's your proof in the pudding.
I know Sam has got a negative outlook. Pete and I still, we still believe. We still believe. We're seeing red.
You still believe in the Tooth Fairy, don't you?
I do. Sam Finjanovic, WGN Radio Sports. Thanks for being here. And hey, you know what? When you're in here going, I think I get a chance to beat Toronto. I think they could beat Cleveland. We're gonna play this tape back.
Cool.
Sammy's mad.
Well, you aggravated him with all that nonsense.
All those nonsense questions. Like, could the Bulls be any good? No.
It's okay to be a believer, but you have to be a realist as well.
I like it though. So that's that fire. It's that fire.
Telling you.
Like, as we said, you know, who's seeing red?
They should have shipped Derrick Rose off to Toronto,
man. Right?
He'd like T.O. It's a good city.
There you go. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this weekend, Revel and Fulton Market will be the place for a benefit for BBF Family Services, formerly the Better Boys Foundation. They'll have a night of entertainment called Sacked, the Roast of Richard Dent. It'll feature live music and an after party, and you can get all the details at WGNRadio.com. facebook.com/events. Of course, the Colonel, Richard Dent, will be there, but so will be his former teammates, Dan Hampton, Steve McMichael, Otis Wilson, and others. Yes. Dent is a Hall of Fame defensive end for the Chicago Bears, Super Bowl MVP, four-time Pro Bowler, and, of course, recording artist. You can't leave that. Richard
Dent. Yeah, you can't leave that out.
Richard Dent, welcome to the show. It's good,
it's
good
a pleasure,
to see you.
Pleasure. Now, this is the download?
The download.
Ooh, oh, download.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Download is a totally different show. Totally different show.
I thought maybe I was back home in Atlanta, the download. I mean, no, a lot of things is, going on.
Yeah, right.
There.
No, okay. No, the download.
Oh, the download. That's gotcha. Sounds good.
One letter makes a big difference, right? All right, so let's. Yeah. How does. I guess the first question is, how does one roast you? I mean, what. How'd you get involved in this?
Well, you know, this guy's going to, I imagine, have a bunch of lies to tell or whatever, you know, and they just don't know that I got the last. Well, I'm pretty sure they know that I have the last word, just depending on how I feel and how many drinks I've had before I come up. So, but this with BBF, Better Boys, you know, it's been an organization that's been helping out, you know, the North Lawndale area, you mm-hmm. know, is an area that's been having problems for quite some time. And BBF been a milestone for that area for many years. And with Harrow City, it's, the way things are right now, it's very important to keep stability in the community with an organization like that that's tight on funds right now, you know,
right.
And when you see what's taking place, it's we owe it to the communities, we owe it to ourselves as a city, as a citizen in Chicago, to help Chicago, you know, be what it always been or to be better than what it is today.
Well, so, let me ask you, I mean, you are a former athlete to play yeah. for Chicago Bears. I mean, you're not from here, but you've spent your life here in Chicago. Yeah. You are as Chicago as anyone else. How important is it for you to be involved in the Chicago community?
Well, you know, the history shows that, you know, migration to Chicago has always been the spot. I remember going to Tennessee State, and guys that I went to school with always talked about Chicago. And the guys and, guys and women, they seem to be pretty cool. Cool people, nice people, and you're like, hey, you know what, I got to check that out sometime. And never thought about, you know, the Bears drafting me. At that time, it was the, you know, it was the San Francisco and the Raiders, you know, they was talking about getting me. And when the Bears popped up, I was like, oh, Chicago, isn't that something? So he's the only guy I know up there is Walter Payton. You know, a guy went to Jack State, went kind of took the same route that I have taken, you know, as a kid, and, you know, and came here and just fell in love with the city, you know.
What do you remember about coming here as a rookie out of Tennessee State? What was Chicago like in 1983?
It was surprising, first of all, when I came in and I see the town was going erupt just because the black mayor was in. I'm like, what right. the hell is this about? You know, I'm from Atlanta. We had our first black mayor in 75, 76. I thought the North was prepared and ready, you know what I mean? But this
right.
is it. You know, as a player, you know, you on the field, you're in the locker room, everybody's sitting around, sizing each other up. When in the locker room, folks, that's folks who don't understand. When you sit in the locker room, you all, everybody's looking at one another and sizing people up and saying, who's going to help, who can do this,
right.
who's that.
You know I have mean? To beat this person
yeah,
to make
yeah,
the team,
well,
that kind of
that
stuff.
Team,
right.
Or
yeah.
that guy there is great for us, or this guy may make the team. And I'm in a situation, I remember I've seen Mike Singletary, he was on the phone. I'm like, so what do you play? He said, I play linebacker. I said, man, you look like a fullback. You sure you're not a fullback? And, you know, I saw Keith Van Horn. He was so big, I just kind of doubted myself. Then when I put my hand down, my memory came back. And so, you know, Chicago was, you know, and get a chance to sit beside Walter, you know, was something that nobody's supposed to sit beside Walter. If you do, you're going to get hurt. And clearly I sat beside him, and then I got hurt, you know. So I don't know what it is. He always had the first three rows there, the first three seats, I should say.
Really? So you gotta have to figure that out as a rookie. I mean, you figure out where to sit, the dynamics are, where not to sit. Right, right. right.
So it's you know, you got to carry the film projector, you know. You got to make the team, you know. It was, again, though, Chicago, my vision as of, you know, wanted an opportunity. It's kids today that talk about they losing money before they get to the league. And, you know, whatever you have in your pocket, you have more than what you had
well,
before.
Well, that was, I mean, we're going to talk about that because one of the things I remember, I'll never forget that I was a young kid. I was maybe 10 years old, 11 years old. and I found an old VHS. And on the VHS, like for my dad taped all of the Super Bowl stuff. And I remember just a couple years ago putting it in and going, wow, look at this. And it was Rich King at WGN going, we're not sure if Richard Dent's going to play in the Super Bowl because he's holding out. He only made $90,000 this year, and he's asking for a little bit more. And I forgot about that. I mean, that's glossed over as in terms of the you were like threatening to sit out the Super Bowl.
Well, I wasn't threatening, but, you know, my agent, I can remember walking into the locker room and Tyrone Key said, hey, man, what's going on with this? So, hey, he got the paper because we call Tyrone Scoop. If you want to know anything, Tyrone read every paper across the country. I mean, what are you talking about? So I'm looking, he's like, oh, you're not going to play? And I'm like, oh, gosh. And damn, now we lose the game, they're going to blame it on me, right? So I like, hey, you know, I got to come out. And I got to, you know, which we was already hyped to play. And the Giants basically put the tight end on my side, so knowing that we weren't flipping that much. So they came over and started playing tight end on my side. It kind of slowed me up. Yeah, it slowed me up, but allowed me to put a jam on the tight end. Then I was telling Hampton, sometime he listened, sometime he didn't. And I just ran down the middle, so I just jammed the tight end, stood there with him a second, paused a second, let him get upfield between that guard and tackle. And I just come right off his tail and come run right down the middle, you know. It wasn't something that was called, but, you know, to me, Sunday is my day.
Right.
Let me ask you. Do what I can see what is the opportunity is there.
Holding out for the Super Bowl was about money. And I understand it didn't happen, so we're not really talking about it. But
you know, my agent was talking about it. But the point was that, you know, when I came back, you know, obviously my second year, I made Pro Bowl. I started game 7.
Right.
And didn't have but one sack, and he ended up getting 16
That's
sacks
unbelievable.
In 10 games.
Right. It's unbelievable.
Okay, and didn't get anything for it. Didn't get defensive player of the year, didn't get defensive lineman of the year. Come back the second year, led the lead again, didn't get nothing for it. So to me, I'm like, oh, what in the hell is going on? What's going on? Why is it that, you know, if I lead the lead 2 years in a row and don't get anything, what does that tell you as an individual? Either this organization is not with you or don't want you to have the success that you have, or what? Or, you know, I wasn't able to be free.
Well, this is before free agency. I mean, the free agency came a year later, 2 years later, when Wilbur Marshall got the big stuff. But
Wilbur came from a big institution, alumni program that enforced that situation for him as being a first round pick. I'm a 7th round pick. I don't have that kind of backing. But I had that type of ability to do what I want to do and however I want to do it. But the point of it is, you know, so I was really like, oh, now if I lead this league 2 years in a row and don't get bored, then I'm really, you know, like, what can I do for you to accept me?
And what kept you in Chicago then?
What kept me in Chicago is Chicago, the people in Chicago. And the people in Chicago love the game. It's where the game started.
You got the right answers.
Then, you know, the point of it is, it was more to me than just a football player. I'm not just a football player, but yet and still I had other things that I wanted to do. I mean, I didn't start playing ball until my senior year in high school. I mean, I used to work. I probably worked every fast food known to man from, you know, 6th grade through 11th grade. So, I mean, I grew up with 7 brothers and 1 sister, and I'm 6 out of 9. So I got a lot of hand-me-downs. And the point of it is my family couldn't afford what I wanted or anything I wanted to do. So I had to go to work. And that's what I did. And once one of my friends told me, he said, hey, you know, you can do this the rest of your life working, man. Why don't you go try your dream? And that's what got me out. You know, and one, you know, you're kind of afraid because you think you may fail. But, you know, you got to find people in your life that's going to push you to somewhere where it's an area where you're uncomfortable. But once you're able to see that you can open those doors and you can get there, and that's when your mind opens up and blossoms. And that's what happened when I came to Chicago.
Well, we'll talk. Let's take a break. Richard Dent, the Hall of Famer, I'm in awe. I mean, you are as much a hero in the city of Chicago as anyone that has ever played the sport or lived here, and it's a pleasure to have you here. You're here for the
pleasure being
sack, the roast of Richard Dent. Yes, again, I don't know why anyone would say anything about you. Luckily, it's former teammates, because I don't think you're going to see comics up there taking a shot at the Colonel. This is going to be on Saturday night at Revel in Fulton Market. All the details are on WGNRadio.com. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more with Richard Dent. Stay with us.
The sack man's coming. I'm your man. Dent is a quarterback, so he's going to get again. We stop the run, we stop the bet. I like to dump guys on it. We love to play for the world best fan. You better start making your Super Bowl plan. But don't get ready or go through any trouble unless you practice the Super Bowl shuffle.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, the Colonel,
how you doing,
Richard
folks?
Dent. Richard Dent is going to be featured on Saturday at a charity event called SACT, the Roast of Richard Dent, which is a benefit for BBF Family Services, formerly the Better Boys Foundation. Right. It's going to be at Revel in Fulton Market. You can get all the detail, all the stuff's on WGNradio.com. You know, for you, I mean, you've obviously had a pretty big month. I mean, this was the Super Bowl 50 anniversary. Crazy, yeah. I mean, the 30-year anniversary of the Chicago Bears being the MVP of the Super Bowl. Also being a part of the 30 for 30, which was bigger than the Super Bowl here in Chicago. Everybody wanted to see that.
Yeah.
What was it like being a part of that? And tell me what you think of the finished product.
You know, the 30 for 30, I just didn't know exactly. You know, you try to figure out ideas. Of, you know, where they're coming from and how all these guys did it was, I thought, was kind of very classy, mm-hmm. as of, you know, how, because it wasn't like what you probably expected. But we had so many crazy different personalities, I should say, and we all was out for the common goal. Now, we competed with one another. We all wanted to be the best. We all wanted endorsements. You know, I'm sure you had some guys, you know, a guy like Fridge that came in out of nowhere. Dicker didn't know exactly that was going to take off like that. Then he tried to knock it down. But right. then again, while he was trying to knock it down, it started blowing up.
I guess the only criticism I heard of the 30 for 30 is that Chicagoans know that story. We right. know it. It was almost for the nation. It wasn't for us because it was. But there were a couple little storylines in there that I was interested in. How did you react when they drafted the Fridge?
Oh, I think that we knew that Dan and Steve was, you know, getting up there in years. They had to bring people in, mm-hmm. without a doubt. I think Fridge was, you know, a guy that could move. You know, I was glad to have him work on my side, you know, and we got tight there, you know, that I can rely on him. And I asked him to, look, run when you come my way, run to the numbers. Because if it's past the numbers, you can stop. I got it. You know, don't worry about it. So me and Fridge, we controlled what took place over there. We knew that what you could do or what you thought you could do, you know, and when you can do that on your side, when you can dictate what's going on, then now I can focus in on where you're going, because you can't come this way with knowing that you're going to take two to get him. And the best way you can get anything is in between us. That is not going to happen. All I do is squeeze. Like now you see this option read thing that they're
doing. Yeah, right.
I would love to see that, yeah, because all I'm going to do is come right off that option read, and I'm going to hit that quarterback and let him know two or three times, and let the coaches know, if you want to send him over here by yourself,
he's going to get knocked out.
Right. So, you know, you got to what I call PP on your territory. You don't come over here. This is my territory. You know, a dog wet on his territory. So this is my space.
Anything on the outside of numbers, yeah, you wet yeah, all yeah, over it. Yeah.
You ain't coming this way. So I used to get on Hamp and Steve knew him, and I used to call their side 294 because everybody running that way. And they're not paying no tolls. They're just running. Right, so it was fun, but that's how we used to.
You should use that one for the roast. That's great. When it's your turn to get up there, you got
a lot more than that. But you folks got to come out and see the roast. It's going to be fun. But again, it's going to be fun. It's all about helping community.
All right,
go right.
The two other things that came out of the 30 for 30 that I was interested in. One was a division between the offense and the defense. That the story that was told that you guys didn't really talk. The idea that the offense and the defense were almost two different teams. Now, as a football fan, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. They're not one team. But you've played in other markets. You played for the Niners. You played for Philadelphia. Is that always the case, or was it just the case with the Bears?
You know, and like how Singletary didn't feel about Buddy, I felt about my college coach, Joe Gilliam Sr., who was his son, played with the Steelers. So, you know, having somebody like that allows you the game and gives you the game. It puts you in the best situation of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't play if you didn't know your stuff. And I had a problem, really, those first few weeks when we were talking about my second year. When we got a man on the center and we got nobody over the guard, I got to spill the play, meaning I got to use my right shoulder. I have to come in there and make that play bounce outside. But when I got a guy beside me, then I can squeeze. But things are happening so fast, I wasn't getting it. So, you know, Buddy had, you know, he had a problem. If you don't know his stuff, if you're not on it, he's not going to let you play. So finally I got it, and eventually they gave me a chance.
It's amazing
but,
to think.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, we used to run before practice, walk through. Buddy wanted us, we do up, down, we do shuttle run. Then Fallon, we said, hey, buddy, look. He said, well, you guys win, and we don't have to do that. Got it. All right. We're winning.
You guys won all those games because you didn't want to run.
We won all those games, so we didn't have runs because we run with him. Then we got to run with Dick at the end of practice. So we got two, you know, so we're in the best shape of all.
So you don't have to run. That's good.
But Mike was good in keeping us loose. You know, I think some areas there he kind of overstepped in some spots, you know. But
you said in you said in the 30 for 30 that your biggest regret or what you're upset about was not being able to win more. And you said we didn't manage the quarterback situation.
You got to learn. I mean, when you manage people, if you look at a guy like McMahon, you know, you get him hot, get him pissed off, and he'll come in and he'll do something for you. We didn't have another quarterback that could deal with Mike Dick. Everybody else is worried. And you cannot play any sport, or you can't go to work every day worrying about your boss. And I'm not talking about sports. You could be in here, wherever. If you're worrying about your boss, you're not going to do a great job. You know, the boss have to understand that it's in your hands. And, you know, that's how Mac took it, you know. And, you know, Mike used to scream crazy and stuff. And, you know, you got only 45 seconds, man. You're going crazy for 20, and now you got to come up with a play in the next 20. I don't think those plays going to be that great. And, you know, Jim had the wherewithal to call good plays. But, you know, when you play 64 games and you lose 10, you only get one Super Bowl. Something wrong. You had home field advantage 4 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the Flutie thing came in. That was wrong. You know, at that time, you got two guys. That's disrespecting the other two guys that's been there for 2 years that could have been playing. Our point on defense was like this. We always spot people 9 points. We figure that we're good for six, and we're good. And I know I'm good for a turnover to get a field goal. So we know we're good for at least 9 points. If you start getting 10, 12, 13, it's getting a little tight, you know. It's hard to get two touchdowns. And if you get two fumbles, you get something like that, then, you know, you don't know the field position. Maybe you get it, maybe you're not.
Richard Dent's going to be the man, I guess, the what do you call it, the roastee?
Yeah, they're going to roast me up.
The roast of Richard Dent will be at Revel in Fulton Market this Saturday. It's a benefit for BBF Family Services, formerly the Better Boys Foundation. You can find all the info at WGNradio.com/events. Let's take a break for the news. We come back. Let's talk more about life after football.
Okay. Do it loud and do it proud. Do the
bear crawl. Bring it up, everybody. Welcome back to the download here on WGN Radio. My guest at the big table tonight, the Colonel, Richard Dent, Super Bowl MVP. He's going to be roasted on Saturday night. Sack, the roast of Richard Dent, will be at Revel in Fulton Market. It's a benefit for the BBF Family Services, formerly the Better Boys Foundation. His former teammates, Dan Hampton, Steve McMichael, Otis Wilson, and others.
Yeah, I'm sure they love the roast of chicken. They're going to call me the Colonel. They're going to call me everything of that nature.
Do you like the Colonel as a nickname? I mean, it kind of comes with the old saying.
Well, all the teammates, they were saying, you know, they called me the Colonel because I only did one thing and just kept going upfield. I'm like, well, hell, if you ain't beat me, I'm going to keep doing it. And I can remember guys telling me, hey, you got to use your hand. I said, for what? I'm going to stop? Use my hand? For what? You know, and about the third, fourth year, Bubba Parris put his hands on me, and it felt like a pole, you know. And it just locked me. I'm like, damn, I can't even move. What's going on here? And then I started reverting and starting to look and see all the different, like Mike Hartenstein, how he used his hand, Dan, Steve, you know, Jim Osborne, Mark Gastineau, who a person I thought was very creative, when he would go backwards. He'd grab you and take two steps back.
So these are the people that you learn from grew your game from.
Well, the point is you look and you got to see what they're doing. You may not can't do that, but you got to figure out how to. You got to find that new wrinkle if you want to have longevity.
I'm amazed, you know, there's so many defensive ends in the league that, you know, hundreds and hundreds, that their job is to rush the passer.
Right.
In your case, you are one of a handful of defensive ends, Hall of Famers, who successfully did that. I mean, you were double-digit sacks all the time. Mm-hmm. What was your secret, I mean, to being – because it got tough. It had to have been tougher, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to have teammates, first of all. You know, you got to have teammates. You got to have coaches that help you. It's all about getting people off you. The only way you get people off you is you got to send more people. You know, you send more people, get them off of you, you know. But the game is math, you know. We got four guys up front. If they doubling me and they doubling Steve or they doubling Hemp or Fridge or whatever, it's got to get them off.
After the Super Bowl, I would assume, and you know better than anybody, that teams game planned Richard Dent. Meaning they said, you know what, he's going to be the guy that's going to change the game. We'll take our chances on the other side. We'll take our chances with the defensive tackles. So you've probably found more chip blocks. You found more double teams. How did you continue to have success?
I control the chip block, meaning that the only block that used to get me when they motion inside, when they motion from the outside with a wide receiver. You don't think about that. You're not even looking that way. When you get that lick, that wakes you up. And it's not about the lick. It's just
someone hits you and you're not even looking at it. Yeah, right.
You're not paying attention to what's happening out there. You're paying attention to what's going on in there. I mean, I'm looking at the quarterback hand that's on the center's tail. I can look under there. I can see his hand sitting there. When his hands start rising, he has to look forward and ride that center on that snap. But then again, I look at the 30-second clock. You come out of that. If you come out of there less than 10 seconds, it's first second count. I'm jumping, period. So you have to learn how you can find the wrinkles. I watch my man for 15 minutes. After that, I'm learning everybody else. I'm learning the offensive coordinator, turnover situation.
So you're really observing a lot of beyond the play, right?
I'm not the Sega player, which most coaches want to make you play like Sega. When it comes Sunday, it's my day. I've studied, I've watched, I did what I need to do. And if I'm happy with my appearance and what I've done, I'm happy with it. But yet, you still need your teammates to allow you to do what you do great. But, you know, sometimes I went off stream quite a lot. I mean, all interception, mainly I got 8 picks and probably 6 of them mean just going off stream. But the point of see ball, get ball. You know, that's the name. I'm out there, I'm playing. You know, why am I going to ask coach, can I go do this? Oh, hell no, I'm going to do it.
Let me ask you about later in your career. You left and had success elsewhere, and you came back to Chicago. You played in, I believe it was Dave Wanstead was a coach.
Oh, that was a rough one.
What was that like coming back? I mean, being a Super Bowl MVP, coming back, 95 in my mind should be up on the rafters. Like, what was it like coming back at the end of your career, different situation with the Chicago Bears?
Well, I think it was more pressure put on Wanstead more than anything. I remember when the 1 year Wanstead came in, it was 90 or 91?
Yeah,
92, 93,
yeah.
And, you know, that was my last Pro Bowl. And I think they had Andy Heck from Seattle. And I'm like, so they want to pay me the same thing they're paying him. I'm like, no, that, you know, I'll take less. I'll go on the road. I'll go somewhere else. Right now, you know, I'm a free child now. You know, I've been up under slavery. I've been through hell for 10 years. I want to explore. You know, if it was less money or more money, I really didn't give a shit. It's just the point of it is, it's when you've been up under a situation like that and you haven't had any freedom.
Right.
My freedom was being able to go and
do something else.
And do something else.
Test the market,
you know.
Was it, the way you talk about it, I mean, the Bears, I mean, for us, I mean, we see 95 just harassing players. We see you as the heart and soul of the Chicago Bears. I mean, but there always has been this sort of feel that maybe the Bears organization hasn't been the greatest to the players like yourself.
I don't know, the way you just said it was like. Well, you know, you see, you know, Buck is, and Gale, you know, it's been that thing. I think the Bears is an organization that they've been making their money strictly off the game and nothing else. It's they're very screwed about. I guess I don't know if it come down from Papa Hallis or what, but to me, I never felt that. Like I said, when you lead the league 2 years in a row, you don't get anything. You don't feel appreciated. If anything, you know, when I went out to San Francisco, I felt appreciated. I wish, you know, I could have played longer. You know, when you feel appreciated, you'll run through a wall. There's a lot of things you would do when you feel someone really appreciates your service. When you feel appreciated like that, and that's what I felt in the latter part of my career, and to say, you know, let me get on in business because Chicago, big city, big vision. You know, Atlanta was really too small for me to go back for the vision and what I wanted to try to do. And Chicago opened its arms to me to say, whatever you want to do, if it makes sense, let's get it done.
So for you, you know, at your post-football career, you've been in businesses. You've been in energy. That's been one of the fields that you've done. But you've definitely kept your roots here in Chicago. Looking at your career and everything that you've done and all the towns you've been in and places you've been, what is Chicago done to form Richard Dent, to be a part of who you've turned out to be as an adult?
I think history is very important, you know. No history, you don't have nothing. So when you can look back and you can see what took place in the last 50, 40, 100 years and whatever, and you become part of that, you know, you put some things down on paper that now that's part of history. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about, you know. You know, my grandfather told me, you know, when you come to your gravesite, you're going to see a time that you came in, a time that you leave. In the middle of that is a dash. That's your reflection time. If you were here 100 years or 100 days, what is it that you're going to reflect on when it's time to go? And what I reflect on is that championship game when we won, when we was actually Wilbert scored the touchdown after I stripped the fumble. And I can just, you know, I can see it now, and it's snowing out here now, and I can look and just see Fridge waving his hand and that big gap in his mouth just wide open, and, you know, it, and the people just erupting. And you know, it's a feeling, it's a thought that I'll never forget. And I'm sure when it's time to check out, that's one of the things that, you know, I will appreciate. And I used to love to see when Walter would step out of the huddle and start clapping, and everybody get out of the I want that kind of power. Right. You know, I mean, the guy steps out of the huddle and is clapping. Here, then he make a run that goes crazy. I'm like, hey, I like that, you know.
What does it mean to you? I mean, obviously, your history is a big part of what you think about and what you're into. So how does it feel to be such a big part of this town's history?
Well, it, you know, like I say, it feels good. You know, it feels good. It's a place of, you know, I've been around for a long time, but yet to stay here and live here to make it here. It's like, you know, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. You know, I think the most important anything that this city allows you to open your eyes to all what you could do for it and what it could do for you. Fortunately, you know, I've had a chance to meet so many great people over the last 30, 40 years here. And you know, you create so many great friendships of people that you met from when you first came here. Or when you came back or whatever, it's just been marvelous to the folks that I've had a chance to run across, you know, by through football. You know, football gives you opportunity to shake a lot of hands. You never know who hand you're shaking. You know, wealthy people, no non-wealthy or whatever. But the point of it is their appreciation to the game. You can't bullshit them about the game. Mm-hmm. And they love the game. That's one part. Once you get to that, then maybe we can start talking about other things. But the point of it is, they appreciate your service.
You know, for you, I mean, obviously the positive part of playing football in Chicago has been immeasurable. I mean, you've had so, like you just mentioned, the relationships, the history. We're hearing more and more about the negative side of football, health reasons, head injuries, concussions. Yeah. You know, for you as somebody who played a very physical style of football and will be remembered for it, do you think about your life, you know, moving forward and with complications that may arise from playing the game?
It's scary. It's scary, but it's something I can't worry about. You know, it's like, you know, we've opened the bottle, we've drank the water, and you know, whatever happens, you know. I the fact that, you know, the league knew about bad helmets since the 30s and back then when I came in the league, I think you could probably buy a team for $150 million or so. And now they're at the billion-dollar mark. You know, they're well over the billion-dollar mark. But it's the camaraderie that you have with guys that help you to accomplish the common goal of being the best that you can be. You know, we all got to check out at some point. We can be a car accident. A lot of ways you can leave out of the league reserve. You got to go anyway. The point of it is, you know, what is it that you have given back, you know, either to the planet or to your community or to your family or to your friendships? And you know, the game of sports gives you that opportunity to have that camaraderie to be the best that you can be in whatever. Everybody wants that same thing in business, you know, and I always say that. You know, the media make money on you going up, and they make money on you coming down. So you got to figure out on the way down, you know, what is it that you benefit from?
Right, what are you going to get?
Because, you know, on every high horse, people have – the president is on the highest horse. And being in the National Football League, you're looking out the way he's looking out. But the point of it is he has to come down off his horse.
At some point, right.
And I've always believed you never get yourself too high on a horse, and you can't be too low. Just keep yourself right in the middle, you're going to be fine. You know, just don't get too high about what you're doing. You know, it's, you know, this thing like what they say with this thing with Cam Newton, all this, you know, the point. Yeah, we was pretty crazy. We created a song, Game 8, but we knew we was going to take care of business, you know. And people had class about when they made plays and do things, you walk away, you know, not respect the person that you're playing against. You know, and never I would say, you know, oh, they didn't do nothing special. Yeah, if they kick your tail, they did something special. Give them their due. Give them their due and you walk on. Say, hey, I'll see you next time. Because here's a guy that could, off the field, probably do something like Michael Jordan did on the basketball court. But, you know, if you want legacy money, you have to act legacy.
Yeah.
You can't be that way. You know, Peyton Manning, you know, he's a legacy guy.
Let me ask you this as we wrap up here.
Sure.
Way too much talk about the 2015-2016 Denver Bronco defense. And the linebacker starts spouting off.
Let's talk about something else.
2015 Broncos versus the 85 Bears defense. Not even.
We're wasting our time, folks. We're wasting our time. Put them up against, you know, Baltimore. Let Ray Lewis and them figure it out and see who wants to come and accept. See, because to me, if you don't have me on the team, then that's a fault.
There it is.
It's all about your stance. If you can get out of your stance, you know, it's guys you see now that their back is parallel and their leg that's up is on their chest. Well, that's a good stance if you want to jump straight up. But if you want to go forward, you got to get your ass up. And then your head come up slowly, you know. And if you're on the right side, put your right hand down. You know, left side, put your left hand down. You know, but a lot of coaches want you to put the left hand down on the right side because they want you to worry about that's inside. Why are you worried about inside? I got four people in there. I should be worried about the corner, and I got to get upfield. So it's, you know, it's fundamental things. It's just laws of gravity, you know, that can help you. When you can get out of your stance, now you can be whatever your heart said it wants to be. But if you can't get started, you know, your blood pressure can't rise.
I'm happy to say, and I think I speak for a lot of Chicago Bears fans who played on the playground, I modeled my game after you.
Like, no,
I was,
didn't.
Yeah, I was more of a, I was the Richard Dent of our playground.
Did you snatch somebody and just swing them the dirty?
Exactly.
You know,
when, you get yourself out of the end. Get my stance down, ass up in the air, came off the edge.
Let me tell you something. I was sacking. Brett Favre just came to the Packers. And you know how he did the stiff arm and his highlight fan. And he tried to stiff arm me once. They're like, no, dude, you ain't going to be a highlight on me. So when he stiffed me, I just sit. You know, when you got an arm, you just sit. And when you sit, that arm ready to come right out of socket. So I was ready to sling him, and he got on the ground quick. Well, don't be trying to stiff arm me, man. Do that to those defensive backs. I'm the wrong guy for that.
All right.
Come on out and see us.
Come
folks.
On out to Revel in Fulton Market on Saturday night. Sack, the roast of Richard Dent. It's going to feature live music, an after party. It's the benefit, the BBF Family
Take
Services.
Five Bears. Yeah,
they're going to be Hampton, McMichael, yeah, Wilson, singing, dancing. WGNradio.com/events. Richard Dent, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. My pleasure. You guys take care. God bless you all.
It's Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 9. With you till 9. It's 9:10. With you till 11 tonight when Patty Vasquez takes over with Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. Well, the Chicago Tribune's making a slew of changes that supposedly have nothing to do with their new majority investor, Michael Farrell. Bruce Dole is in as editor for Jerry Kern, who retires effective immediately. And today the company announced that they're changing the rules of their digital subscription model, going from a paywall to metered content. What does that mean? Well, we turn to our new media contributor, Scott Smith. Scott's worked in several news shops in town, and he's now the man behind OMIC Strategies, a media consultant company. Scott Smith, welcome back to the Download, buddy.
Good to be here as always, Justin.
So let's talk about this Tribune stuff, because there's just been a tremendous amount of change within like 2 days.
Right. And honestly, having worked in, you know, newsrooms and having worked in media environments, you know, this kind of stuff doesn't happen quickly, and it doesn't happen, you know, in response to the things that always seem like they do. I mean, obviously, Farrell purchasing a 17% stake in Tribune Publishing You know, that sort of thing happens on the 4th of February. It's announced. It's obviously, you know, in the works for a long time before that. And he's stepping away from, you know, day to day at the Sun-Times reportedly, which also is a thing that, as far as I understand it, has been kind of in the works for a while. And then Jerry Kern then stepping down as editor to be replaced by Bruce Dole. You know, those are things that don't necessarily happen immediately. And with all of the big changes and all of the big personalities at all those, you know, papers, I think while some of these things look like they're all completely interrelated, they aren't necessarily. Yeah.
Well, you know, the Tribune has said they aren't. The Tribune's like, well, no, it's just, you know, these plans were in the works. It has nothing to do with Michael Farrell, but it does seem very suspicious timing. But I also want to talk about the Sun-Times, because the Sun-Times as well goes back on their word of not doing editorials. They do a scathing editorial of Bruce Rauner, who famously was endorsed by the paper because Michael Farrell and Bruce Rauner had connections. So was that sort of perceived as a sort of see you later, Michael Farrell, Sun-Times is back?
You know, I think that has probably, of all the things that have happened in the last, let's say, month and a half or so, that's been the one that's probably the most related to anything having to do with Farrell. So obviously, he and at one point Rauner was an investor in Rapport. So these two are pretty tight. Folks will probably remember back in 2014 when Dave McKinney was temporarily pulled off the beat and then later resigned from the paper as a result of what he felt was undue pressure for an article that he wrote that was critical of Rauner. So, you know, it's interesting to me that somebody like Bruce Dole, who has been on the editorial board of the Tribune, which is famously conservative and famously, you know, advocating for conservative positions, you now have as, you know, their sort of, you know, overlord has left the day-to-day operations, particularly in the newsroom. The Sun-Times has now seemingly found its voice again as a counterweight to the famously conservative Tribune. And it's interesting to me that, you know, when we talk about a two-newspaper town, we don't just mean, hey, it's great to have a vibrant media environment. We really do mean it's important to have, you know, powerful voices that are debating these issues for a good long
time.
It was
two different points of view. Right. That's what it used to be like in Chicago. And you know, we haven't seen it as much in the last couple of years, but that would be a welcome change for readers in Chicago.
So for people who are worried that Farrell, you know, having involvement in the Sun-Times, having this involvement in Tribune means that everything is going to be, you know, pushing together. Here is some signs of life. You know, as you said, some pretty scathing editorials against Bruce Rauner, you know, going so far as to, you know, mock what they said were his silk shirts and his habit of dropping G's in his speeches. So, I mean, it's certainly looking personal, and it does certainly look like, you know, people who romance the newspaper wars of old, it certainly does seem like it might be a return to some of that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what happened today, because there was an announcement on the website about how they were going to change the way they do their digital subscription content. Meaning, you know, if you're a reader of ChicagoTribune.com, you know that there are some articles that are behind a paywall. They have a little blue plus sign next to them, and you can't get to them unless you pay for the service. They're changing. They're going to a more, I guess, more popular metered content strategy. Tell us about that.
Right. So the little blue plus signs that you saw in all the articles are going to be gone. And so famously, what would happen is you would hit a certain kind of article on the Tribune's website, and you would be prompted to have registered or prompted to be a subscriber. It depended on the kind of content. You know, columnists typically were behind that paywall, but not if you came through a social media link. And the sort of rules for it were really confusing. And so it was hard if you were a subscriber sometimes to know what kind of value you were getting. And if you weren't a subscriber, it was really hard for you to know kind of how to get access to this stuff. So all that's gone now. This is 10 articles a month that you get for what they'll call their free access. And once you hit that, you'll be prompted to be a subscriber. This has been a model that's worked a lot of other papers, most famously the New York Times. And it's worth noting that Denise Warren, who is the head of digital as of last May of last year, is coming from the New York Times and bringing some of those folks over with her. And it looks like this is, you know, looking like she's bringing some of what has worked for the New York Times over to the Tribune. Obviously, there have been plenty of New York-based publishers that have tried to take what's worked in New York and make it work in Chicago. And what they usually find is they have to tweak things a little bit. The approach is always a little bit different. So it sort of remains to be seen how successful that model will be at the Tribune. But it certainly seems to be clearer for the average reader.
Yeah. Scott Smith is the man behind OMIC Strategies, a media consulting company. Let's take a break. He's also our Download's new media contributor. Let's take a quick break. We come back. I want to talk about, I'm confused about Insta articles. And this is what Facebook is sort of doubling down on is the future. Once again, sort of, you know, putting more and more of other people's content on their platforms. We'll talk with Scott about what that means for you, the reader, and what that means for news publishing companies around the world. And we come back here on the Download. Stay with us. All right, let's get back to Scott Smith here on the Download. Scott, of course, the new media contributor here. He's also worked in several news shops, and he's now the man behind OMIC Strategies, a media consulting company. Scott, let's talk about Facebook, because one of the things that I'm fascinated with is how Facebook has really co-opted the page views and revenue opportunities for news publications. I mean, a lot of the problems that the Sun-Times and Tribune are having just to be able to get ad revenue has to do with the way that the social media sort of empire that is Facebook has robbed them of the opportunity to get sort of collected page views.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we were talking about the Sun-Times in the last segment, and many, many people have a problem with the way that their website loads and the stuff that's on the page and what have you. And in that quest for revenue, a lot of newspaper sites are kind of throwing everything they can against their sites, and so it makes it load slower, and it sometimes doesn't load at all. And what Facebook has done through this instant articles format is allowed for articles to load in a very clean, very easy-to-read format, and has also, though, included some ad spots on the page, but that load in a very kind of clean way. And so they're sort of offering to newspapers a problem that they didn't have until newspaper websites created it for themselves. And that's, hey, we're going to make your articles load a lot faster. Facebook wants that because it means that people will spend more time in Facebook. It's a more pleasing experience for them. They know that this kind of rich, deep content that, you know, newspapers and magazines and the BuzzFeeds and the you know, Vices of the world create is what people really want.
It's fascinating. So essentially what's going to happen with the Insta articles is you're going to be able to see something and Derrick Rose scores, you know, 30 points in the Bulls blowout loss tonight. You're going to click on the Sun-Times and it's going to open inside Facebook. It's not going to send you to the Sun-Times. It's not going to take you off of that platform.
Right. The publisher has that choice. The publisher can make that decision. And, you know, sites like BuzzFeed do everything in instant articles pretty much, whereas sites like the New York Times will be choosy about what becomes an instant article format. They say that they put their sort of most quote-unquote social stuff inside an instant article. There's still a revenue opportunity for publishers. If they sell or embed advertisements in the articles, they get to keep 100% of the revenue, or they can let Facebook sell the ads, and the social Facebook will take 30% of that.
Okay. I mean, I guess that you know, seems to be somewhat of an opportunity for publishers.
It is, and I guess it's like everything else Facebook is giving you. At first, it seems like a really great idea. You seem like you're getting this really great deal, and then the deal starts to seem less and less like a good idea. I mean, most newspaper publishers have seen their reach drop quite a bit. They're seeing less click-through from Facebook because Facebook is really trying to keep people within Facebook as much as possible, which is why you're seeing so much video in your newsfeed now, because Facebook likes embedded video. It keeps people on Facebook. It keeps the experience in their control. It remains to be seen how this changes over the course of a publisher's relationship with Facebook. Will the revenue model change? Will the format change in some way? We were talking about Tribune's, you know, meter paywall in the last segment, and, you know, the only way that Tribune can get you to be a subscriber is if you actually hit their website. So for places that are looking to develop more subscription models, this kind of prevents that from happening. It still, you know, builds on an advertising-only model.
Will you see, I mean, you mentioned BuzzFeed, but will you see other companies buy in wholeheartedly and maybe skip the idea of having a landing page and be able to just serve Insta articles and sell the ads in the space that's provided by Facebook?
You know, there are publishers like Now This News, which don't actually use a website. Most of their content is what they're calling the distributed content model. So you could see it on Facebook, you could see it on Twitter, you could see it on Instagram, you could see it on Snapchat. But they don't actually have their own website where their content sits. And I think you'll start to see more publishers pursue that kind of model. And they're really interested in just getting the brand out there and kind of picking up advertising from the different, you know, rates that, you know, sites like YouTube or sites like Facebook will cut with them. So, I mean, I think you will start to see more publishers kind of think about what is the meaning and what is the role of our website really about anymore. Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of publishers it's kind of their own fault that they're in this position because they've made their website become less essential and more problematic to a lot of readers.
It's, you know, you and I have both been in newsrooms on the website, digital side of content. And when you think about this, the Insta article craze or the idea that this could be almost its own social media advancement or platform in the way that, you know, there may not be a need for a NewYorkTimes.com or a ChicagoTribune.com in the future. I'm not saying right now, but in the future where Facebook is or place or behemoths like that, whether Google or Facebook, they are the internet. It's just mm-hmm. like it's there, and that's where you get your news, and the brand Chicago Tribune on the masthead of that article is going to be much, much more than ChicagoTribune.com.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It sort of reminds me of the old AOL days. Remember, like the Chicago Tribune website was basically just a channel inside AOL for a good long while. And unless you had access to AOL, you weren't getting access to Tribune. So will that be something that, you know, more and more, unless you are within a certain kind of social platform that you don't have access to certain kind of content, or maybe you only have access to certain kinds of content. Maybe it's just the most Facebook-friendly content, and the stuff that Tribune and other publishers will host on their own sites will be the stuff that they feel like, you know, New York Times has kind of said, you know, we do some pretty cool stuff on our own site, and the storytelling tools that we feel we have are better than what would be offered in instant articles. And so you may see just some very specialized kinds of content like Snowfall and the New York Times and that. That may be
what's on the New York Times.com, right?
Look like.
And you know, I mean, that's not that far off because news companies now all have social media managers and they have people who give voice to their Twitter or voice to their Facebook page or any other social media platforms they may use. So it's not that far off that you'd have an Insta article team.
Right. Yeah. What is the team that decides, you know, okay, this is going to be the instant article. This is going to be for this platform, this is going to be, and honestly, you know, I've been in newsrooms where that's been the case. You know, you develop certain pieces of content for the platform because honestly, the stuff that plays well on your website doesn't necessarily play well in full form on Facebook. And so you are now creating six or seven different versions of a story for the platform itself.
I think it's something to look at. I saw the article. I think it's interesting, but I also think that it could be a huge advancement in social media, or at least the way that we use the internet. Scott Smith, the man behind OMIC Strategies, a media consultant company. He's worked for so many shops here, and he's also our new. I guess we could take it away now. You've been on for 6 months or 8 months.
Yeah,
now.
I'm more the old new media correspondent.
You're the old. You're the middle aged.
Right. Well, it's not. Come on. That sounds worse than old somehow. I don't know how, but it does.
Our middle-aged media contributor, Scott Smith.
Oh, God.
I think it's stuck. You say it three times, it's stuck,
unstick
man.
Unstick it.
Unstick it. See, now we're talking social media. We're sticking stuff.
Yeah. See, there you go.
Scott, good to talk to you.
Good talking to you, man. Take care.
Telling you, we're on to something, Rob. There's going to be no news websites in 20 years. It'll just be an app called News. And you'll go there and you'll check out the stuff and then it'll be the brands, like those little graphics of what the, you know, the WGN logo, the Tribune logo, or the Sun-Times logo will be on. I guess the question would be like, do you subscribe to their feeds? Do the algorithms make their thing bigger than the other person? It's just, I'm telling you,
but there will always be WGN.
That's right.
My concern would be this, though. What do you line the bottom of your bird cages with?
The alt weeklies.
I mean, you know, if everything goes to an app, I mean, we're
the
really
Relcon
hurting.
Apartment guide. You can get that and all the stuff you find in the freeze. Right. Yeah, I love the tagline that's on the side. It was on the side of the building for a little bit that said WGN social media since 1919 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. For 90 years, that's what it was.
Sure.
So it's the original social media.
Your fence post of conversation right here.
There you go. All right, are we gonna do news and content, or are we just gonna go back and forth with taglines?
Whatever you like. I mean, I've got some things I can talk about.
just for the next 2 hours.
I typed up a couple stories.
Go back and forth on a couple marketing ideas. All right.
Sure.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the Writers Theater in Glencoe is about to celebrate its 25th anniversary, coming up here in a couple of years. And what better way to do that than to build itself a permanent space? It's like an early birthday present. Anyone who knows the Writers Theater knows that their last two spaces left much to be desired. So they put on their hard hats and got to the business of raising money to build a new $28 million complex. The building, designed by rock star architect Jeannie Gang, is getting high praise. With me in studio are the powerhouses that got it done. And anyone who knows theater knows that permanent spaces are not that easy to come by, let alone build from scratch. Michael Halberstam has been the artistic director of the Writers Theater since its inception back in 1992. Halberstam was just deemed the number one man in Chicago theater by New City. This was part of their top 50 list that they put out. And Michael was number one. How's that feel? That's crazy. All right. Also joining us, Kate LePuma, who is the executive director, and when she's not building new spaces, is also the chair of the League of Chicago Theaters Board of Directors. Great to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting us.
Wow. I mean, first of all, congratulations on building a new space. I kind of tongue-in-cheek say it's not easy to do, but it really isn't that easy to do. I mean, when you think of Chicago theater, it's a handful of people have been able to accomplish this feat.
It was an amazing experience, actually. I mean, I sort of just focus in on our project. I felt like it was the right thing at the right time for the company. Our current space left a lot to be desired over at the Women's Club because the infrastructure was quite literally crumbling, and going into the restrooms was always a perilous experience, I think, particularly for the ladies upstairs. The bookstore was still, I think, a really unique place to put on a play, and I think I'll never lose that romantic sense of walking through all those wonderful books and going into this secret garden theater that would just magically appear behind. But definitely the infrastructure of the building did not support the caliber of the art.
Kate, how does it feel to get this accomplished, to see the doors open and know that Arcadia, the play, is coming up here next month? How does it feel to have a new space?
It's probably been the most exciting and exhausting week of my life. I mean, to think back for 7 days, we've actually had a grand gala opening and a ribbon cutting and have welcomed now pretty much all our supporters, our subscribers are coming through. It's probably been one of the most rewarding experiences in my life. It's been incredible, actually.
Well, let's go back to the beginning of Writers Theater and think about what was, Michael, in your mind, starting this theater in Glencoe, what was the initial mission of the theater for what you wanted to do with it?
Well, the initial mission of the theater has stayed remarkably consistent, and I've been really proud about that. We initiated with an idea. A few artists got together and started to talk about what we thought the essence of theater was, and this was partly in response to 2 years that I spent as an actor up at the Stratford Festival in Canada. I really felt, particularly in the early 90s, so much of the emphasis of going to the theater turned into being about sets and costumes and concepts that were being laid over plays, and then actors being abandoned opening night to have to sort of carry the weight of this concept all the way through the run of a show, sort of like being left with egg all over their faces. I thought, well, what if we just scale it all back down to the word and the artist? What if we just hire great actors, do good plays, and then produce them in a way as minimally as possible to distract from the experience of the play and give the audience a really intimate engagement with the text. And that has not changed, I would say, in 23 years. I think it's grown and enhanced. We definitely work now with the highest caliber of designers, but the designers all know that they're in service of the actors in the play.
One thing about the Writers' Theater, which has been throughout, you know, your almost 25 years in existence, is it's based in Glencoe, but it really has a now worldwide reputation, but it has a Chicago reputation, the way that every time you would hear, oh, what they're doing, the show up at Writers Theater, that's it's great, or 4 stars, Writers Theater, that kind of stuff. It just felt like it was less of what people might have thought to be a community theater and more of sort of like a powerhouse Chicago theater. Was that the intent?
Definitely. I mean, I love hearing you say that. It's interesting when you go to work every day in a small suburb with one shop, you know, and you start to get a little lost in terms of your sense of identity. I really, as being connected to the metropolitan area. So it's nice when you actually come down and actually hear people talking about the theater. To realize that you're not just serving on a local basis. I guess I would say that what we did at a certain point, I'm kidding. What we did at a certain point is that we tried to bypass the idea of being a suburban location and think of ourselves more as a regional theater. Mm-hmm. But that we obviously wanted to sustain the ecosystem of Chicago artists. And at the forefront of our mission, we could hardly be a company dedicated to the word and the actor if we weren't compensating our artists well. Right. So at the forefront of the mission from day one has been trying to put as much resource as we possibly could into compensation. So we were actually competing with, sometimes able to draw from, our downtown brothers and sisters in our early days because of how we placed our budget.
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was all my actor friends saying, you know, I love the Writers Theater. They pay.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, the location has always been our greatest strength and also a great challenge for us. You know, a strength certainly in that there's this world-class, sophisticated, really, and I give the credit to Michael, you know, years of artistic excellence, this amazing theater that's not necessarily in a line with 15 other theaters, right? We kind of right. are able to stand on our own. At the same time, we are not in the city. And so the work, I think, has to be that much better. And we have to bring in, as Michael said, a great caliber of actors so that people do pay attention to the company. And I think that's been true from the very beginning.
Now, you know, you just gave me that credit on the radio, on the air, right?
So, well, can we edit that out?
I think
all?
We can edit it out.
Can I
no,
have a retraction?
You have to live with that.
You can see Michael's head is getting bigger and bigger.
I'm telling you.
Okay, if I'm going to throw a compliment back to Kate,
okay, good.
Which I should.
Good.
One of the things that makes Kate the perfect executive director for this company is because she never fights me on that. She starts with her budgeting process at the center in terms of compensation. And when it comes down to looking after artists or finding a way to nurture their process, because, again, you could pay them really well, and then if you treated them like crap, you still wouldn't have a reputation. But the fact that we put so much emphasis on making sure that the artists have a safe and creative place in which to work has a lot to do with how our business structure has evolved, and that has a lot to do with
Well,
Kate.
You know, moving to the idea of leaving the bookstore and moving towards a, you know, your own space, I mean, to take on that kind of challenge. There's a lot of pressure too. What was the pressure like with your relationship, you know, to as a business to say we're going to you know what we need to do? We need a $28 million theater. I mean,
yeah.
That's not easy. Not only to, you know, go to your subscribers and say we need, you know, would you like to be involved in the capital to raise the capital yeah. to do this, but also just, you know, knowing it's a challenge. How did that play out with your guys' relationship?
Well, it's interesting because we never necessarily started with the number. It always started with the need. I think attributed to the success of when we get to the money, the campaign, because our audiences were ready, our artists were ready, we were ready as an institution. We knew what we wanted to maintain in terms of the hallmarks of the organization, which was intimacy and sort of our relationship with the artist and our patrons. And so we started the whole process with what did we need as an institution to grow for our future. And so once we had that, which meant these two beautiful intimate spaces and the rest of the building, then we could take that out to people and say, this is the next step for the company. Can you come along for the ride? And I have to say, at that point, the people that we wanted to talk to about, you know, providing mm-hmm. some of that funding were ready to come along with us, and they were extremely generous.
Now, you notice she avoided your question, which was like, how did that play out in our relationship?
So anyway, Michael and I are
brutal.
Now in therapy.
We had a trial separation.
We did.
But we think we're moving through
you're
it.
Moving through it, good. Do you guys usually butt heads? I mean, you don't. I mean, do you guys? I mean,
every once in a while.
I just think about it as like
a small
theater
when
company.
I'm right and she's wrong, I mean, I
feel
like
that's... I just let him pretend that he's right all the time, and it just solves everything.
You two are adorable.
It's true.
Let's Mike, take our show Michael, on the road,
Kate. Michael Halberstam, Kate LaPuma. In studio with me, Writer's Studio. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about I mean, what I'm getting at is like, you guys, I mean, the theater companies usually are a small business. And there is this relationship between sort of the executive director and the artistic mm-hmm. director. We have to do this. We don't have the money for this. Mm-hmm. It's like that kind of, you know, and now you guys are making that transition into one of the big theater companies in Chicago. And I want to see what that, or talk about what you think that looks like. We'll talk more here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guests in studio, Michael Halberstam and Kate LaPuma, both of the Writers Theater in Glencoe, celebrating a brand new space. This, I mean, it looks pretty. I haven't
gorgeous.
Stepped foot in it.
It's beautiful.
It looks great.
Trust us.
It looks great. Rockstar architect.
Even the pictures
Gina Gang.
Don't, like, you know, do justice to the experience of standing in that theater. It is one of the most beautiful buildings.
Well, I mean, wasn't Blair Kamen was on Chicago Tonight talking about how it adds a little bit to Glencoe.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about building spaces anywhere in any place, you always think about what you can add to that community. And not only being a theater company that adds arts and culture and value to a community, but now you're adding aesthetics to the community. That's got to feel good too.
And I'll tell you something else. You know, in terms of the sort of second part, follow-up to one of your earlier questions, which is where I was saying I was feeling, I often felt like a little bit isolated from the Chicago metropolitan area, and sometimes being in a suburb felt like a negative. For this building project and how this building has emerged, being in a suburb was an absolute plus on every level. Not the least of which because I think Jeannie is so specifically focused in terms of how she creates a building. Mm-hmm. She built the perfect building for Glencoe on that site. It is such a compliment to the environment. She works with materiality and environment. We work with the word and the artist. These are two sort of unifying principles that draw us together. And I think she really outdid herself. That, and I have to say that the Village of Glencoe was absolutely amazing in terms of how they work with us to help us get this through.
That's right.
A project of this scale in a suburban setting
Right. Really
shouldn't happen. But I think the determination of people like Lawrence Levin and Karen Thomas partly what pulled together.
I think it makes it's a testament to you because they could easily be like, go build a $26 million space somewhere else. There are other places we can't do it. We this is not that kind of town. But
we explored that option. I mean, we looked around at surrounding suburbs, and they made a very impassioned, clear, determined, and really articulate pitch as to why we should stay. And they made a very convincing case.
Let me ask you this. You know, one thing about I think of the argument about Millennium Park. When Millennium Park was built in the years after, there was a question about, yes, you can build a beautiful park, but how do you sustain that park for generations? How do you continue to have that be a bottom line or a line item in a budget where you need this much money to be able to have a park for everybody in Chicago? Talk about that feeling, about the idea that, yes, it's unbelievable to raise the capital to put this building together, but now the hard work starts. You have to live in it, and you have to pay for it for years to come. Talk about that experience and what that means for you as an artist.
I mean, the discipline of the team in terms of creating performers and projecting scenarios for challenges we might face in the future, I think all that was built into the business plan for the theater. From an artistic perspective, I feel like we've always been working in a theater like this. We've just never actually had the building to do it in. Does that make sense?
Totally.
So, I feel like you'd walk into the bookstore where you can see a production that's playing right now, our last production in the bookstore, Marjorie Prime, fantastic play directed by Kimberly Senior, a beautiful production. It really, you could see a production of that caliber in any major city, in any major theater town, in any part of the world. It just happened to be nestled in this bookstore. So I feel like now we actually have the infrastructure around us to support us so that we'll be looking after our artists on a better level. The engagement with the audience will be more intimate.
Do you worry at all as an artistic director that has become a part of your spirit, your productions, the idea that it's in this bookstore, that there's this whole thing that's happening with the Writers Theater. Do you worry about losing that when you move into a brand new space?
That's a super smart question. I think actually we built into the theater a sort of, for want of a better word, a lack of state of the art. Because I keep on to every time we try to put out a press release and somebody says state of the art theater. I say, it's not a state of the art theater because state of the art to me means it's going to be falling apart in 2 years and everything that you put into it is now obsolete.
Right.
You know, look at, you get two new iPhones a year, for goodness sakes. It's like, how are you going to sustain a state-of-the-art in a theater? What I really wanted was a room that we could grow and expand in, but that still had some obstacles in the way for us to overcome in order to be able to do the kind of plays that we wanted to do. From, you know, what is it? Mother is the necessity of invention? or is it necessity is the mother of invention?
Same idea,
proof
right?
is in the pudding, that kind of thing.
That was like so Freudian.
I don't even know what you're talking about anymore.
Mother is the necessity.
Story of my life.
I'm going to take that to therapy this week.
Oh, that's good.
Necessity is the mother of invention, which I think has been a watch cry for the theater company over the last, really over the full 23 years of its existence. You go see a production like Anne Frank, you think, how are they going to put Anne Frank in that space?
Right.
But somehow or other, Kimberly Senior manages to do it.
I mean, talking about when we talked about this, this 95, 96,000 square feet, that's what exactly we got rid of. all sort of those bells and whistles that we don't think eventually was going to add anything to the art beyond what Michael and his group of artists could really achieve from like, what we have.
Like so, a trap, you know, like a lot of theaters have a trap. So you'll see like a little square of wood move away and then a chair will come out of the trap. Right. And like to build a basement for a theater was going to cost like $3 million. And I was like, so that you could get a chair to come out of the ground. Right. And I so there is a situation where you really have to get your set designers you get super creative.
Yeah, but now you can't have Janet Jackson concerts in there. So she has to rise from
we're going
to
fly her in.
Fly her in. Okay,
the roof
got it.
Opens up and then they come right in.
I love Janet.
I'm interested in your life when it comes to running a theater company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's not an easy life. And there's been times when I'm sure that's been ups, and there's been times with the Writers Theater where it's been down. I mean, talk about that experience and what it means to you to be a lifer in this industry. In this,
are you trying to make me cry?
I'm not.
Is this like Barbara Walters?
This is exactly my cry moment.
Oh my! I knew
I'm following a format. Yeah.
I think one of the big challenges that you face when you really do dedicate yourself to an institution as its leader is you sort of have to put your own career on the side, because a career director really has to be directing a good number of projects a year in order to be able to create an identity, hone the craft. So at some point, I began to realize that as an artistic director, I had a greater responsibility to the whole of my institution than I did to my own selfish desires as an actor. And I had to figure out at a certain point how to blend the two so that it didn't eat me up. There was certainly a few years where I felt like I was working so hard to facilitate everybody else's vision as a director that I actually forgot about my own. And now I'm a little bit more self-preservationist in terms of the fact that I will make sure that the project that I am directing that year is the project that I really want to direct, not the project I think I should direct because everybody else got the cool project.
Because right.
When it comes down to it, you have to be excited to come to work every day. That said, once you can shift the perspective of your thinking, once I was able to shift the perspective of my own thinking and to realize that I can get just as much pleasure out of seeing other artists fulfill their visions, and we've had some amazing productions in our space. You know, if I think about our directors, Ron O.J. Parsons, Stuart Carden, Kimberly Senior, David Cromer, Kate Buckley, Bill Brown. You know, we have a really remarkable group of artists who come and fulfill their visions in our space, and I feel like I give them opportunities that they don't necessarily get at other places. I take an enormous amount of personal joy in that. So it's when you come up against these sort of destructive moments, maybe the darker moments, it's just a matter of re-envisioning them and then channeling them into a more creative and positive energy. Does that make sense?
That does. It's good advice for all artists and any form, any discipline. Kate LaPuma and Michael Halberstam are the executive director and artistic director of the Writers Theater in Glencoe with the brand new space. Arcadia is starting in March, and you're directing Arcadia, which is the
That's
new show.
That's great. We'd start rehearsal tomorrow.
And Marjorie Prime's still on stage at the bookstore.
For another 4 or 5 weeks.
March
16th?
March 16th, yeah.
I think it's going to be a destination for all theater goers to get up to Glencoe and see the new space. For both of you, thanks for
Thank
coming
you.
In and spending some time with me
Thanks,
tonight.
Justin. It was great.
Appreciate it.
There you go. Beats by Zim here on the download. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Jennifer Hall going to be in studio coming up after the news this hour. Excited to listen to some live music from her. She's been around the scene for a while. Up-and-coming artist has been on tour. Is going to be playing Beat Kitchen on Saturday night. I love the Beat Kitchen. The Beat Kitchen is one of those places that feels like, you know, it has that sort of, it's on West Belmont. It's got that great kind of like, hey, you probably could have seen a band here that like a Liz Phair or something like that. Like
oh,
coming
yeah.
up. And it also has like really good quesadillas.
It does. They do have good food there.
So it's just sort of like, oh, great. A little bit of like, oh, rock and grimy rock and roll. And oh, yeah, I'll take some extra sour cream. Thank you.
I like about it is that it's, you know, it's like the bar and restaurant in the front, and then the music's in the back. But a lot of times, like places like the Hideout, they'll close the doors.
Yeah, right.
The Beat Kitchen, they leave the doors open.
Oh, they
so,
do, so you can hear it.
So you can sit in the bar, you know, and not mess with the riffraff.
Beat Kitchen for a while, and they still do it. But, I mean, they have a great sort of comedy scene, too.
A lot of comedians that play that back room. I've played it with Schadenfreude probably 10 times, 15 times over the course of our career. It was great. I mean, mm-hmm. they could do so. They have a lot of things, so it's fun. They loved having us on there because there was no setup.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so funny. Like, a band sets up, they're like, it takes an hour and a half. Doof. Doof. How's that snare? Doof. Can you try the bass? Doof. 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 For like an hour. The band, that when we go in there and do comedy, they're like, what do you need? We're like, one mic. And they're like, yeah, all right, check
we
that
got
mic.
You covered.
Check. And then we would do that for an hour. Speaking of live shows and setup and all that fun stuff, here comes a couple of live shows, Pete.
Yeah,
I'm excited, man.
We've
got the
I'm
auto
about.
Show tomorrow night. We're going to be at sort of, I guess, Radio Row, mm-hmm. right at the beginning of the auto show at McCormick Place from 7 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do the last hour will be here. But from 7 to 10, we'll be at the auto show at McCormick Place. So tomorrow mm-hmm. night, we're going to talk with Mike McGrath, who's McGrath Lexus, McGrath Auto here in mm-hmm. Chicago. There's a lot of great stuff, but he's also the co-chair of the auto show. Also, Lee Bay is going to come by. I promised him food, so we have
we have some Pequod's pizza here.
We would just bring it too. Yeah, we'll talk about Pequod's too. Because you know it's hard to get guests down. Like when you do remotes like that, it's hard to get guests in the building.
Yeah,
especially at the auto show.
Yeah,
so it's sort of like when I'm emailing guests like, hey, you should come down, because Lee when he was a columnist for the Sun Times, he wrote a lot about Motor Row, which was South Michigan Avenue, South mm-hmm. Wabash. Like it was just an area of Chicago that was a lot of car dealerships and different things, and also just the history of the auto industry is right around where McCormick Place is.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to come by and he's going to talk about that.
Great.
Which I think is great. So we'll talk with him. Also, and so to get him down there.
Promise some free food.
I just promise. I'm like, there'll probably be donuts. We'll just have to steal from somebody.
It's intimidating when you say McCormick Place.
Yeah, because he could be anywhere.
Yeah. It's monstrous.
We're in the way left 14E. You get a left 14E in the older section. Just go to the floor 7. Go past the Erie Crown. I always feel like wherever I'm at, I pass the Erie Crown. Oh, there's the Erie Crown. Whenever I'm at McCormick Place. No, and also Steve Gadlin,
yes.
The Frying Pan,
live.
Is live at the auto show. He's going to be doing something car-specific, an invention,
incredible.
An innovation for something specific to cars. So great show tomorrow
night.
That's
going to be
so fun. So that's tomorrow night at the auto show. But on Tuesday the 23rd, coming up here, coming out to Pequod's for a special, get this. So the first hour is going to be a Blackhawks live broadcast
mm-hmm.
With Troy Murray. How cool is that, huh?
Awesome.
They're going to talk hockey, and then it's going to be the download from 8 to 11. Now, get this. This is what's going to be great. You're going to have a chance to win prizes, including premium Blackhawks versus Predators tickets. So I think the way we give away those tickets has to be what's your best put down for the Nashville Predators. Because if you listen to the download, you know how much I hate the Predators.
Yes.
I'm becoming more and more. I've bought in. I've gone all in. I've committed to being a Blackhawks fan, and the one thing I've learned from doing that is I'm pronouncing everybody's names, and I hate the Predators. So it's just everything about it. So have you ever been in Nashville? Like, seen the stadium there? It's just like nestled into. It kind of ruins the aesthetic of the kind of honky tonk.
It's like right
road.
On Broadway there. God. Yeah.
Ah. Oh God. Oh Pete. Anyway, we also have some gift cards for Pequod's Pizza. The guys from Pequod's brought pizza down here today.
How about that?
I haven't had Pequod's in a while. So to have that, like, I mean, and it was kind of awesome because Kevin brought in 3 pizzas and we laid them out. It was just me and you, really, here tonight
mm-hmm.
and, you know, guests. But no one shows up to do an interview being like, oh, yeah, I'll take a piece of Pequod's. But the word got out.
Oh, yeah.
And the WGN staff on the way out of, you know, the 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock bell. Down. It was. I've seen people I haven't seen in months.
Yeah, I was like checking IDs and make sure they worked here. It was nice to see Rob come down though, because Rob doesn't
Martier
make it down too
down,
much.
Yeah.
Like to see him down.
Always
here.
Like to see him because he's up on the seventh mm-hmm. floor. But yeah. So we're gonna be at Pequod's on Tuesday night. So this is so cool because Troy and I think Judd. I keep hearing it's just Troy, but I think Judd's there too because the script says Judd. So Judd and Troy, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Then at 8 o'clock. We're going to continue the conversation, talk Blackhawks, give away tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Someone from the Blackhawks ambassadors is going to join us. We haven't figured that out yet.
Mm-hmm.
9 o'clock, which is going to be fun. We're going to have a conversation, or actually, at some point in the night, we're going to have a conversation with Josh Caterer from the Smoking Popes.
Yeah,
how cool
that?
Is that?
Awesome.
It's great. The Smoking Popes, obviously, a huge band in Chicago. If you grew up in you know, northwest suburbs, you knew them because you'd go see them in everybody's basement.
Mm-hmm.
And then they signed to a major label. They were on Q101 when Q101 was at their height.
So good.
And everybody in Chicago who's a music fan knows the Smoking Popes. And Josh Caterer is going to come by Pequod's 2207 Clybourne on Tuesday to be part of the download. That's so great.
Mm-hmm.
So great show. I mean, we have a bunch of other stuff too that I just really can't say yet because we don't know if they're confirmed, or I don't want to say yes. Yes, President Obama will be there. And then, oh, you know what? He can't. So, yeah. But we're working hard on that. So that's coming up. Like I said, Pequod's is at 2207 North Clybourne. This will be on Tuesday night from 7 to 11. Get the details online at WGNradio.com/events. And thanks for the pizza. All right, coming up, Jennifer Hall. She's in the building. She's in the building. We have live music from Jennifer. Her self-titled EP was out this fall. She's got a show at Beat Kitchen. Somebody just texted in from 630, said, Beat Kitchen's great. They let my friend's son's band play. 13 years old.
Wow.
The band was 13. Or maybe he was. I don't know.
Were they a crabby band or were they a good band?
He didn't go into detail.
Yeah.
I'd have to look that up. I'd have to really cross-examine and try to... Give me 2 weeks. The band's name was Walrus Attack.
Huh.
That's a good 13-year-old's band name, Walrus Attack. So coming up also, the one thing I wanted to mention before we get to the news is that we're also going to be covering Super Tuesday.
Yeah,
which
coming
is
up.
The week after. So we'll have Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy on Monday.
Terrific.
To sort of recap Nevada. And then we'll come back out and, you know, be South Carolina, and we will be at Super Tuesday, March 1st.
Awesome.
And so we're going to do like we did for the Iowa caucuses, where we're going to have live election here on the download, 7 to 11 o'clock, because that's you know, that's Eastern time. That's mm-hmm. We're going to be
over
all over it. And we'll have a lot of guests, including Cook County President Tony Preckwinkle and a lot of the people. And, you know, which is great about being a part of WGN and Tribune Media is that we'll have some access to some of the reporters that are covering their states.
Scene, yeah.
That's great.
On the ground.
That's something that... So, yeah, we'll have fun. I love doing that. I love it. I think it's great to have a results show in Chicago about politics. It's not just watching the scroll on CNN. Oh, God. I read this whole article about red and blue. Why CNN and Fox and all the... they use those colors. It was interesting, and it was about, I don't have it in front of me, but it was about how there are only two people who make sets for those kind of shows, and they used to be one company, and they split, and now, and it's like contentious, and now they go after the same contract.
Infighting.
Yeah. It's like, it was a fascinating article on, and then they talked about why the tones, blue is chosen, because you could do anything. They said yellow and white are the preferred colors for morning TV. And at evening, when it's CNN and news, when they're talking about news,
mm-hmm.
you'll see it's mostly red and blue. It's something about that those test well.
I've never been involved in any of those tests. Have you?
Have you ever been in a meeting where they had to pick a color?
I don't know.
When you were working with Dahl, there wasn't a lot about what the studio was going to be colored?
No.
No, that wasn't on the... I mean, I think this is going to be see what happens in Nevada and South Carolina. But I mean, even today, I mean, this election cycle is not disappointing. If you're
it's
a fan
so
of just
fun.
Drama, the
so
Pope
fun.
Is involved. Come on, man. When does the Pope get involved? Pope and Trump. But you're a disgrace, Pope. Come on. It's so good. It's so good. It's like
it's fun.
It's either the real life election cycle or the dramatization of O.J. People's versus O.J. Simpson. Those are the two things happening in our culture right now. Watching what probably was a fake conversation with Robert Kardashian and his Kardashian daughters. Did you see the show?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more important to be fit, not to be famous, but to be a virtuous person. Oh gosh,
I know.
But I also like that Hillary Clinton is taking a little bit of gruff for speaking to Goldman Sachs and some of the other places. You know, she made $675,000 on three speeches mm-hmm. to Wall Street, and people want to see what she said. Release the transcripts. Here we go. Release the transcripts. You need to release it. But you know what's interesting is she said she would if everybody else did. And that's what I love about all of this is that nobody's asking Ted Cruz, you know, about the speeches that he's given for money or Donald Trump, for gosh sake, or Bernie Sanders, which would be interesting to see. Now, they looked at Bernie's. The New York Times reported that Bernie Sanders has made three speeches in 2015, I think it was. And he raised $2,000. Hillary Clinton, $675,000. Bernie Sanders, $2,000. You make more money as a comic playing the lunchtime student union circuit at the community colleges than Bernie Sanders did.
Yeah.
$2,000. I mean, really, if you're a comic and you want to go on tour to a college, they'll pay you more than, like, you pay more than $750.
How many speeches? Three. For Bernie? Three?
$2,000.
Yeah.
Like, who's he speaking to for two? Like, this is like, come on, man. Come to my backyard. Come on, Senator. Like, we had so much maple syrup, we don't know what to do with it. Come make a speech. I'll give you $300. It's crazy to think about. I mean, I don't know at the end of the day what senators make. And I'm sure that's where I really want to get. How much money are senators making or Secretary of States or anybody in politics off of private for-profit speeches, you know, to Wall Street, to big businesses where, you know, like the motivation. When we've always seen the videos like the Starbucks annual meeting, you know, where they built this city, you know, and someone got paid $25,000 to do that. Or comics get this all the time.
Yeah, sure.
Leo Burnett here in town has a huge one, and comics show up and they're the MC and they get paid thousands of dollars. So what is, I mean, it'd be interesting to like, it'd be a good book or a good article or a good conversation. We should find out if somebody knows what is the market going, what is the market and who are making these speeches. I'd love to know what Senator Durbin and Senator Kirk and President Obama, Mayor Emanuel, Governor Rauner? Who's Governor Rauner making speeches to? I guarantee you they're not making $2,000. Come on, Bernie. I'll give you $100 in this watch if you just tell us about what it was like in the civil rights movement. Okay, I'll do it. Like, what is he doing? $2,000. I almost feel like that makes him unpresidential because he's just so lowballed.
Yeah.
You know, like if it was $200,000, I'd be like, see, Bernie, take all that money.
Have some self-respect, Bernie. You deserve more than that.
If it was like he made $175,000, I'd be like, well, Hillary made $650. Bernie is righteous. $2,000, you're like, come on, Bernie. You got to get a better agent, man. $2,000. And I just want to know what it was. I wanted so bad to know what those three speeches were. I'm sure one of them was on the lawn of the Vermont Indy College, whatever, in Burlington, right? University of Vermont, talking about, you know, pesticides to the student union. They're terrible. All right, Bernie, we put together all our money, $700. I just love it. I love it. I don't know. All right. All right. Let's get to Jennifer Hall, shall we?
Yeah.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock when Patty Vasquez takes over. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Chicago singer-songwriter Jennifer Hall is in studio with me tonight. Hall's best described as indie soul, indie rock, let's just say singer. She's been a fixture on the Chicago scene for a few years now with several outlets calling her an artist to watch. She put out her self-titled EP this summer, and she is playing as part of the Dun Dun Fest at Bee Kitchen on Saturday night. She's in studio with me, along with guitarist, co-writer, and producer Noam Wallenberg. And we're going to hear some live music in just a sec. Jennifer, Noam, welcome to the download.
Thanks for having us.
Hi.
So let's talk about the show on Saturday. I mean, you guys have been playing all over. I just saw, you know, a bunch of stuff on your Facebook page playing in Ann Arbor.
Oh, yeah.
So let's start. What can we expect from the show on Saturday night?
So the show on Saturday, part of Dun Dun Fest, which is awesome, through a good friend of mine and an awesome promoter in town, Harmonica Dunn. It's a gentleman named Donnie Biggins. He's
very, very artist-centric and has brought in some really wonderful national bands to play this three-day festival. So definitely high energy. It's, from what I understand, the night is going to be very jam-packed with soul, like very high energy soul music, right?
From what we understand.
From what we understand.
That is, that's what we've been told, that it will be jam-packed.
You're going to get there, it's just going to be knows? Yeah, it's just going to be heavy metal.
We
like
can't
a lot
promise
of,
anything, yeah. but we're told.
Right. No, so we're playing with Willie Dynamite, who I'm not super familiar with, but I understand really brings awesome energy, and Basil and the Supernaturals,
okay,
which is a Chicago group, and they've got a horn section, and yeah, just a big group with
well, for you,
good vibes.
I kind of mentioned at the top indie soul,
yeah.
You know, because that's Pete and I were kind of talking about earlier in the show, just about that's how you were referred to in one
sure.
article, and I'm like, indie soul, that's interesting. I was like, yeah. Okay, so I mean, how do you categorize your music? I mean, if it's not, I mean, if it's not indie soul,
yeah. Well, I mean, it feels very, you know, I think it feels very rock and roll. We've got a lot of driving guitars and lots of moments of. I don't know, hard stuff, right? I don't know. And but I've got a deep, deep love for like classic jazz, old blues. And I know Noam has a bit of a jazz background a little bit. Some of our guys have some jazz blues background. I love old Motown records, okay. You know, really powerful soul music, that sort of thing. So we've got some really interesting kind of old school influences, but I think we try to also bring in fresh elements. And I think Noam can speak to that a little bit more too.
Yeah, I think we try to make as different of music as we possibly can, and our influences completely unintentionally slip through quite a bit. So
that's great way to put it. Very producer of you.
That is how it gets.
Unintentionally intentional.
So let's talk about the EP real quick before we hear some live music. Yeah. I mean, you put it out this summer. This was a departure is not the right word. It was kind of a move forward for you, because you had been in a band, you had broken up in the band. You move forward to a different kind of production or feel.
Yeah.
A lot more open.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, we just, you know, kind of took our first stab at being in a band, writing some songs, putting them out. And very shortly after kind of our first go at it, kind of rearranged with some new members. And I think we kept digging and digging to try to find as best of songs as we could within ourselves, and you know, to just wait till the songs came instead of putting out whatever first came about, I think. You know, and just tried to write without kind of a target in mind, I guess, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. To just,
that's interesting, because you're not necessarily,
you know, not really
writing to a
anything.
Deadline.
Yeah.
It's like, we got to put this music out. We got to
right.
tour. It's just about sort of, you know, when it's right, it's right.
Right. I certainly have that. There's always that part of me that thinks, oh, we need to be releasing music now, or, you know, or how about then, or this month, or, you know, but really, I guess that's not the nature of creating and making music. You have to kind of let go. And
well, let me bring Noam in here, because
yeah,
as a producer and a co-writer, I mean, there is some aspect to deadlines. I mean, the idea that you got to put this stuff out, and in Chicago, you got to, yeah, but you also, you know, have to deal with the fact that it's not cheap to make music, even if it's in your bedroom or whatever. But
but
talk about that, the relationship between a producer and artist when you're trying to wait for something to happen.
Sure. Well, I'm a producer to like lots and lots of different artists, but this is the only musical venture that I'm also writing in. So it's a different experience for me than most, in that I am both trying to appease the artist and trying to appease myself.
Yeah, right.
And so I usually, as a producer, am trying to make deadlines happen, and trying to make sure that we're staying on track with budget, and trying to, you know, do all those things. And in this process, we were really just, you know, it's going to happen when it's going to happen.
Is that hard for you?
Yeah, and it's the reason that it took us way too long to make the record that we put out. But we learned from it, and we're going to, you know, put another one out soon that will
sooner
be hopefully another huge step forward, and yeah.
Okay, well, let's hear some live music. This is Jennifer Hall, accompanied by Noam Wallenberg, who's on guitar. He's also a co-writer and producer. Jennifer Hall's EP, self-titled EP, is out. You can find it online. You can also go to the Facebook page, Jennifer Hall. Also, she'll be playing as part of the Dun Dun Fest on Saturday night at Beat Kitchen. What are we going to hear?
We're going to do a song called Would You Walk Away.
Would You Walk Away? Jennifer Hall here on The Download.
Would you walk away with my faults on display, leaking my heart, laying here bleeding for your every move, drifting, pain is climbing walls, never could understand it all. I know I would never be perfect, no, but I'd never stray. I'd never stray, never stray. I will be fading below the lamplight, always be waiting, no sleep satisfied, buried in blackened ashes, to sleep to rise. Life moves down the bended bow, we clutch onto its narrow throat, hoping for a chance to speak lowly for a moment at most. Would you walk away with my faults on display, leaking, my heart laying here bleeding for your every move. I will be fading below the lamplight, always be waiting, no sleep satisfies, buried in blackened ashes, opening dampened lashes, buried in blackened ashes, fighting off future flashes, buried in blackened ashes. Ooh. Mm. Would you walk away with my faults on display, leaking, my heart laying here bleeding for your every move?
All right, yes. There we go. Jennifer Hall in studio. She's playing at Dun Dun Fest at the Beat Kitchen on Saturday night, accompanied by Noam Wallenberg. At the Beat Kitchen, you'll have the full band.
Six-piece band.
We'll talk about that. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Jennifer and hear one more song before the show wraps. All right. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. Live in studio, Jennifer Hall. Noam Wallenberg is also here. He's a guitarist, co-writer, and producer. Jennifer Hall's self-titled EP was released this summer. You can find it all over the internet. Just put Jennifer Hall music in. You can find her on our Facebook page. She's playing the Dun Dun Fest this Saturday night at the Beat Kitchen in, I guess that's Roscoe Village, Belmont and Levitt. Like that area.
Technically.
So we heard the song, and the one thing that struck, not only just the tremendous vocalization, I mean, the power that comes out of, I mean, if people are watching, the amazing amount of just power that comes out of a small person.
Like, you want to know what is the number one thing people say? Like, after the show, we'll usually try to come out and say hi and thank people for coming. They'll say, I really thought you'd be taller. And usually it's this sort of disappointed, confused look. And so sometimes the response is, I'm sorry. And it can't.
Yeah, no.
Or I'll just
no
say
apologies
I
for height. We don't apologize.
Like, I thought you'd be taller. Jen
has a very small dog, so proportionally she looks bigger in pictures.
Well, the other thing that I noticed was, I mean, the power matches the emotion of the song. There's a lot of emotion in the EP. There's a lot of stuff that seems a little bit more, emotionally serious.
Yeah,
it's a very serious
sure.
approach to this music. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're opening up and you're talking about personal issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And this batch of songs kind of touched on the loss of somebody and loving somebody, losing somebody, kind of that sort of point mm-hmm. in my life. Yeah, it's tough for me not to write seriously.
It's not party music, unfortunately. We like to party, but it's not.
Do you find it? Do you find
alone
it,
at home with a seven?
Do you find it easier to? And I don't say easier might not be the right word, but do you find it more comfortable to express that through music as opposed to just articulating it to through other means?
Yes, I would say that has been a pretty solid constant for mass majority of my life. In some ways, it's obviously a very cathartic experience expressing yourself via music, and it does help you to learn, or it's sort of a what's the term? It kind of bridges that gap, mm-hmm. between expressing yourself in music and then in everyday life.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I think at some point it almost felt like the way that I knew how to be emotional and communicate, and then as time went on, it kind of helped you to develop that more thoroughly in life, which is
it's all communication.
It's
been
a treat for me. So
all right, Jennifer Hall, Noam Wallenberg they're in studio. Let's get another song before we wrap. Great. Right, what's this one called?
This one's called Waking Hour.
Waking Hour, Jennifer Hall. You can check out Dun Dun Fest at the Beat Kitchen this Saturday night, live in studio here on the Download.
Wish for you a new beginning, a waking hour of almost silence, where you can gather what you're needing, make room for all that you are yearning. With buckets full of fickle warnings of fallen victims of that fire that chose those words so undeserving, tripped the ever-taking wire, tripped the ever-taking wire. Screen door telling you that I'm already crossing that Mississippi border. For the world, it looks so pale now, so different from outside the window. Its mouth is mine and I am speaking to give a little to the widows. to give a little to the widows. I am asleep but am awakened. For heavy rain, a simple morning. That screen door telling you that I'm already crossing that Mississippi border. That screen door telling you that I'm already. For the only heavy taking, it moves along till it waits. That simple sign, oh, it breaks. Can't be counting numbers, only in times I bet it all. But Georgia never knew my name though, and I am one that likes to be recalled. Be recalled. I am asleep at home. That screen door telling you that I'm already crossing that Mississippi border. That screen door telling you that I'm already crossing that Mississippi border.
There you go, Jennifer Hall. How about that? Noam Wallenberg in studio. You can see Jennifer and the band at the Dun Dun Fest at the Beat Kitchen on Saturday night. You also find out all about her new music and her self-titled EP at her Facebook page, Jennifer Hall. Noam, Jennifer, thanks so much for coming in, performing live. Thanks for being here.
Of course. Thank you so much for having us.
All right, that's going to do it tonight for the download. Tremendous. Jennifer Hall, wow. That was some good stuff. We'll be at the auto show tomorrow night. Patty Vasquez coming up next.